Okay, well, let's call to order. I have 9:32. Let's see, is Ms. Folks going to do the roll for us today?
Ms. Folks, would you prefer that I do that? You know what, I'm going to do it.
Okay, you're on the list anyway, Ms. Pakanon, so I overlooked that. Yeah, thank you.
Okay, Dr. Stenhoff?
Here.
Dr. Davis-Wilson?
Present.
Dr. Davey? Ms. Denton?
Present.
And Dr. Rates? You have a quorum.
Thanks, Ms. Pakanon. All right, so board staff, a lot of behind the scenes things going on. Thank you for that work. It was great. Ms. Galvin, of course, always your counsel here is really needed and appreciated. And then those of you who are on the committee as well, again, just a good time working with you. I know it's a long day sometimes, but really enjoy the time. And then the applicants that are here, appreciate you all coming. And I wanted to note that there are also, from what I see, students from a local university online that I've noticed as well. So appreciate you all coming and attending and learning more about this process that we go through. So, all right, so let's move on. Agenda item number four, approval of minutes. So I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, can we bulk approve those minutes or do we need to separate those out? From my review, I thought we could bulk them. Okay. Okay, so do I have a motion to approve September 24, 2021 regular session minutes and the 24th executive session minutes?
So moved.
All right, a second.
I'll second.
I'll second.
Oops, all right, thank you. All right, all in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Aye. Opposed? Okay, motion carries. All right, let's move on to agenda item number five, discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding recommendation of the board pertaining to the approval of behavior analyst applicants. So if there's no objection, I'd like to move the applicants who are attending to the front. Is there any objection from my fellow committee members on that? Okay, so I'll do it in that order, and then we'll move to the remaining applicants. So first agenda item number is Lewis Anderson Morrell. Dr. Davey, you're the lead on that.
Thank you very much, Dr. Stenhoff. Make sure I'm not muted.
You're good.
Oh, good. Okay. Wow. Gosh, just, you know, coffee's really kicking in. We're actually at a request for further information from this applicant, and we had the application come forward, but we reviewed it. There were some issues with regard to some previous experiences with law enforcement around DUIs. We received information around three of those while the application was being reviewed. We received information around a fourth incident with law enforcement. And so we kind of tabled this to ascertain some more information with regard to said issue. And so there are just, there are still a lot of questions around this application in reviewing the documentation. The individual has provided board staff and therefore the committee information with regard to those incidences with law enforcement. However, the written statements do not correspond with the reports from law enforcement. So there are multiple incidences where the applicant has either omitted critical information or has made to, in the writing of the letter, seem to propose that alcohol was not involved in the incidences where in every single one alcohol truly was. So I have just some concerns around the pattern of this. You know, the letter is very nice and speaks of extenuating circumstances. However, the police reports speak for themselves. The timelines from the applicant as they're provided do not line up. The blood alcohol contents do not match up with the written letter as well. And so I actually would like to go into executive session for legal counsel.
I'll second that.
Thank you.
All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Okay, motion carries. Yeah, I'm just looking for names. Yeah, we're good to go.
Am I allowed to begin, start again?
Yeah, please.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and thank you, Ms. Galvin. So it's my understanding that the applicant is here. And so I think what might be best from the committee standpoint is to maybe have a period of time where we could speak to the applicant and ask about some of these questions, some of the perhaps the inconsistencies between the written statement that's provided to the board and the information that was obtained from law enforcement. So do we want to see if we can get the applicant unmuted, board staff?
Looks like he's here, Dr. David.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. I see you now. I'm going to pin you up on my corner so I can keep track of you as floating heads move around. First off, please tell me how to pronounce your last name so I don't butcher it.
It's Marul, like Mars. Marul.
Yeah. Oh, gotcha. Thank you, Marul. Gotcha. Thank you. So I appreciate it. You heard kind of my statement. Like I've read through your documentation that you provided around the first incident. We'll just call that 2014, second incident 15, third incident 16, fourth incident just this year, correct? Yes, so, sir. You know, in reading through the first three, you know, it is my opinion that, you know, people make mistakes. Like that happens all the time. They learn from their mistakes. They move forward. I've read about your ability to do community service, the volunteer work you're doing. You know, those all sound good. You've gone through, I wouldn't call it diversion, but through the victim impact group as part of kind of the follow-up to some of these events. And I think, you know, when I kind of go through what you've written around those events and then go to square those up with information from the law enforcement group in Oklahoma and then most recently in Tempe, those two things don't really match up to me. And, you know, some of the incidences, and perhaps we'll just kind of look at the last two, so for the sake of time, is the one around 2016, where you report to us that you fell asleep at the wheel after a long night of work, correct?
Yes, sir.
So do you want to talk about that event and, you know, kind of the facts around that event as they pertain to what you wrote to us, as well as the information obtained from law enforcement?
Yes, sir. So while I was going to the University of Oklahoma, I was working at a bar on college campus, which is right across the street from the university. There's a street right there called Boyd and another street called Jenkins that I'll refer to here later. That night, I was doing a double shift. So I kind of worked in the morning. I got off at 4, had a space between 4 and 5, came back on at 5, and then worked until 2. However, on that night, we were doing our liquor checks, where we count how much liquor is in each bottle, and we were doing a deep cleaning of the bar. So I was later there than I would usually be there. I did print out a timestamp, which helped me talk to the police later that afternoon. After I left, I went out to my car after work and kind of sat in my car for a minute. I was tired. I was nervous to drive. I shouldn't have driven in retrospect, but I was nervous to drive. I sat for about 5-10 minutes, pulled out of the parking lot, pulled left on Boyd. It's a quick drive to my house, which is why I made the decision to drive. You pull left onto Boyd, right onto Jenkins. There's a stoplight there, which is where I fell asleep. On the other side of that stoplight, you have the stadium of OU. You turn left on I forget what that street's called. You turn left, right on Stinson, another left, and that's where I live. It's very quick. It was under 2 miles away from where I was working at the time. So I pulled out onto Boyd. I managed to turn onto Jenkins, turn onto that light. Between Jenkins and the light where the stadium at OU was, it went from red to yellow. It went from yellow to red. I started slowing down at the light, and that's where I kind of, you know, that slow down just kind of put me out. It appears that my foot landed on the gas. I accelerated and hit a tree. I remember hitting the tree, or not hitting the tree, but I remember the impact, kind of falling out of my car. I remember wandering through a neighborhood, and then I was talking to the police in my home. And those are my memories of the events. At the time, I hadn't had a concussion before. I ran cross country in high school. I didn't really do high impact sports or anything like that, so I didn't know really what to be thinking or what to be looking for. My roommate and the police report said I was glazed, and I wasn't really able to respond appropriately. I agree with that now. I woke up the next day at around 12 or 1. My roommate kind of recapped me on what happened, and then I just kind of continued through the process.
Okay, so this is, we're talking about the 2016 one. This is the one where you were sleeping, or you fell asleep after a long shift. So walk me through the timeline of that again, because the timeline that I'm seeing from the police report is something different than what you just described. So like the time of their incident is reported to them. So what time are you at work? What time do you leave work?
So this was a mistake on my part. I'm now realizing I filled out the explanation of events completely from memory. So I didn't go back and look at the police reports. I wasn't trying to feed you guys just what more of the police report said. I was just trying to tell you, like, in my case, what happened. In my memory, without looking at the reports or timelines, I remember I was getting off between 3 and 4. I think it was like 4:15 is what I remember and said.
Well, would it be shocking if I told you the police report says that on the 5th of 18, on 2/16, that the incident was first reported at 1:04 a.m.
1:04. That is surprising to me, but not necessarily shocking. Again, I did a lot of this off memory. I don't have the original timestamp that I printed out, but I did print out a timestamp at the time. I can try and find it. It was in no way an attempt for me to guise anything for the board. I did everything off of memory when I sent that to Ms. Malice.
Just for the record, I'd say there's a big difference between working late till 4 a.m., which could explain a lot of things, and then just getting off shift at 12. Mm-hmm. The second question around that incident is there's reports within the police report of them trying to make contact with you after the accident, right? So you crashed into a tree, caused some property damage near the University of Oklahoma. And at this point, you've gone to a friend's house, correct?
I don't remember going to a friend's house. The police did say I went to a friend's house. And again, that's why I built my story around what I remembered, just so it was like my mind.
The police reported that you had walked away from the car and gone to a friend's house when they inquired with you at the, afterwards when they finally made contact with you, later that morning, I believe around closer to that 3 a.m., 4 a.m. mark. Yeah. Yes, sir. That's when you informed them that you had been drinking over at the friend's house after the incident, correct?
I don't remember drinking at a friend's house, but I was being told I smelled like alcohol. I thought that was because of the bar. I didn't know what to say. I don't really remember much of my interaction with the police. I remember opening the door. I remember them asking if I wanted to make a statement. I remember them asking if I had been drinking. I told them I got off work. They said, you were at a friend's house. I said, I might have drank at the friend's house. I don't remember. It is a large blur for me.
Well, based on your blood alcohol content, you had been drinking. So this is the problem I'm having, right? So your recollection versus that is in your written statement to us, those don't align. And it's this committee's job to read those documents and make sure that the information you're providing us is accurate. That's actually your job, that you're providing us accurate information. We are essentially here to make sure that information aligns and see if you've learned from these lessons. And the written statements of, telling this committee that these did not involve alcohol, every single one of them involved alcohol in one way or the other. And so I think that those are some of the concerns I'm seeing here. And I agree the pattern had been broken. And Mr. Morrow, like you had broken it in 18 for a period of time. And then the most recent event in Tempe, again, blood alcohol content shows that even though it's in the slightest, that you made another poor decision between alcohol and driving. And that's where, I'm trying to square this up in my head, and I'm sure other committee members are as well. I mean, we take These is, you know, this is what we're tasked with, is to protect the public and to make sure that individuals we grant licensure to serve the public here in the state of Arizona are fit and ready to provide the services that are needed. These incidences just, you know, give the, at least me as a committee member, some pause. So I'm going to take a breath and let some other committee members ask you some questions, since you're, you know, and again, I appreciate you being here. I think that's an important step in talking with us and trying to clear this up. But I think that that's, you know, something you have to realize, is that the questions we're going to ask are going to be pointed into the and hard. I encourage you to be, you know, truthful with us, and so that we can keep moving forward.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair, I'll pause and let others have a couple questions. I do have some other questions, but I think I'll pause here for right now.
Okay. Other committee members, do you have questions?
Mr. Chair, my questions would likely result in needing to go into executive session. I don't know if anybody has questions that aren't as specific before I make that motion, but otherwise, that would be the direction that I would go with my questions.
Okay. Dr. David, do you have any questions that you may want to ask now prior to executive session? Dr. David?
No, let's get to those questions that may help me decide which ones I want to ask moving forward.
Okay. Dr. Davis-Wilson, is that a motion then?
I'll second.
Yeah. Okay. Let me clarify. That'll be for the review of personally identifiable medical information, and I would like the applicant to be present.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. And possible legal advice if necessary.
Yes.
Okay. Dr. David, is your second still stand?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. So all in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay. Motion carries. We'll move to executive session. Dr. David, you...
Yeah, so I think, I don't know if committee members have any other questions, but, you know, I think at this point I've got two concerns. One, I've got the concern that the information the applicant provided us was from memory. You know, I understand that, you know, you may or may not have had access to the actual documents, but that written statement, you know, is problematic that it does not include the facts as they're presented by law enforcement. It is, as the applicant has said on the record earlier, that it was to his best recollection that he did not actually reference the documents. Is that correct?
Yeah. In order to get the documents, I did have to contact lawyers and stuff. It was harder than I thought. And so I wanted to give Ms. Malice the information as quickly as possible, which I now know was not the correct decision.
So I don't want to put words in your mouth, but, you know, at this particular point, as you hear this committee point out some discrepancies between your written statements and that of law enforcement, you know, what is your reaction to that, just for the record?
I feel like I tried to move through the process too quickly. You know, fear is a big thing for me. This is something that's haunted me for a long time. This is a story that I've had to talk about a lot. As we talk about stories more and more, they get garbled up. I'm trying to be as responsive to the board as possible. So sometimes I think I replied before fact checking everything and too quickly. And so, yeah, that's.
Okay. And with regard to the August 2021 incident, where do we stand with that today?
So the prosecutor has reached out to my lawyer on Wednesday. We still have a trial or maybe two more trials leading into November and December. We could either resolve it, apparently, just speaking to my lawyer, I have no documentation for this. We could try and expedite it and resolve it in November, or we could have it done after Christmas. I was going to leave that kind of where we're standing with the board. I would prefer to do it after Christmas because I want to visit family for the holidays, but that's a different thing. They have requested the state mandatory minimum. They did not bring in the previous incidents into consideration. The second incident was a refusal DUI. So there wasn't like, that's not a thing here in Arizona. And the prosecutor noted that as well.
Okay. So we still don't have closure yet on that one of what the terms of that, the terms of that incident will be. All right. So I think, you know, at this point, I don't want to steal your thunder, Dr. Sinoff, Mr. Chair, but I think probably let's see if anybody else has any other questions, and let's get to some deliberation around this matter.
I just have one question. As far as the incident in which you fell asleep at the wheel, the evidence says one thing, and you today are still stating that it was not alcohol related. Can you speak to how or why they would have evidence that says otherwise if in your testimony today you are, and let me add, I understand, you know, Dr. Davey is elaborating on some of the inconsistencies, but these are significant inconsistencies. These aren't like, hey, I said I was turning left, but I actually turned right. Like, these are a question as to whether or not you were intoxicated at that time. And earlier in testimony, you stated no, that you fell asleep after working and that you had not been drinking. And you told the officers you had not been drinking. Can you speak to why they would have evidence otherwise?
Unfortunately, once I did hit a tree pretty hard. Once I fell asleep at that light, everything is just like little flashes of memory. I remember getting to the light, kind of pulling up to it. The next thing I remember getting out of the car. Next thing is in a neighborhood. I should have gone to the hospital the next day and try and, you know, got medically diagnosed with some kind of concussion or head trauma in that situation. I did not think to do that the next day. I woke up around 1 or 2 the next afternoon, called my parents, went to impound, figured out all of that kind of stuff. But I've never experienced head trauma before. And I don't remember, a lot of those flashes. And so I just tried to report on the things that I did remember. If there was a time period, I'm told that I went to my friend's house, I'm told that my roommate had to call my friend and, you know, send me over. If whatever I did at my friend's house, I don't remember at all. You can't legally bartend and drink in the state of Oklahoma. I don't know if you can do that here, but in the state of Oklahoma, you can't be drunk while serving alcohol. So I wasn't drinking at work. I probably went home right after that, but that's where leaving the parking lot and getting up to that light, I start missing memory.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, I would just like to connect a couple of dots here, if I may.
Yeah, of course.
So, Mr. Merle, I'm not sure if you're aware the purpose of this committee is to ensure the safety of the public. So my largest concern here is in fact those inaccuracies between statements. We are a field that is driven by data. We are a field that takes into account what happens with our clientele, and living from the facts is really part of our worldview, our culture, as well as our ethical compliance code. So I think that for me, whenever we're looking at the concerns and the questions we're asking, those dots are connecting for me in terms of, you know, are we feeling that a licensed behavior analyst, if we were to grant a license, would in fact live by the facts, by the data?
Mm-hmm. I completely understand that. I know the board's number one concern is the safety of the public. And that's why I really want to emphasize my plan to remain safe and my plan for my future behaviors. The inconsistencies with the data, that is a flaw on my end. I'm very frustrated that I sent in my explanation of events before I sent in the police reports, before I even saw the police reports, because it happened half a decade ago. It happened a while ago. And I was trying to be quick. It took me a while to get those police reports. I had to contact my previous lawyer. The police department at OU told me that they didn't have it. So I had to go to another record department of Norman PD, who said that they might have it at like another school. And so getting those reports took a while. I didn't want to have the board wait. So I tried to answer the questions myself. And I believe that that was, now I believe that that was not the correct answer. And I apologize for the board for, you know, representing those inconsistencies. It was by no means my intention. I was truly just trying to get information to the board as quickly as possible.
I appreciate your response. Thank you.
Dr. Davey, would you like the committee to further discuss, or do you have a motion you'd like to
make? No, I think
if I may, perhaps the committee member would want to ask how he explains the BAC if he wasn't drinking.
Yeah, I think that that's, you know, I think we hit on that before. Like, there's a report that there was, you know, not drinking when you were being the bartender, right? Fall asleep at the wheel on your way home. The police report says that's at 12:30 in the morning. You know, you accelerate through a curb. Apparently, there's video cameras with that, with your acceleration and losing control of the car, striking those trees, and then your departure from the scene after the property damage. And then there is this time frame where you have essentially said you're not sure what you did. When the police finally make contact with you around 2, that is where there is alcohol in your breath, and a subsequent breathalyzer shows that your blood alcohol content is above the legal limit. So to Ms. Galvin's point, square that up for us.
I don't recall drinking before the event. I was at work before the event. I don't know what I did up until when the police met me. I truly only remember hitting, you know, you smell the release of the airbag. I remember kind of fumbling out of the car. I remember going through a neighborhood, which I believe either was my neighborhood or the friend's neighborhood. I was at the friend's house, I suppose, for up to an hour doing, I don't know, apparently drinking, and then got called back home and went back home and to wait on the police. Whenever I got back home, my roommate told me, I guess, that the police were going to be there. I waited around, they showed up, and I had that conversation. Unfortunately, I mean, I really wish I could remember what happened after I left work and after I hit the tree, but it is all a buzz for me outside of the smell of the airbag and going through that neighborhood.
Yeah, I believe it, according to the report, which I think you have access to, it's at 2:09 in the morning when your roommate calls and advises OUPD that you had returned home. And then they go to make contact with you and detect the odor of alcohol, alcoholic beverage being consumed since it was on your breath in person. You know, bloodshot eyes, obviously lethargic, is reported at that point. That's not actually your roommate. That's actually the police officers making those statements, right? And so, you know, if they asked first if you were all right, obviously their major concern was the person in the car. Like, were you injured? Are you, you know, and you know, making sure that your welfare was taken care of. And at that particular point, you know, you reported having any medical issues, which again, yeah. You know, at that point, you know, who's to say, you know, if that's the case or not, you know, after you hit the airbag. But I think that the statements from the police officer, you know, says that you knew you left the scene without contacting you know, law enforcement. You didn't combat them or anything. It doesn't seem as if in the report, you know, you admitted you were the responsible party for the property you damaged. You know, you declined at that point to provide them with a written statement, and that's kind of where the, you know, the notes kind of end. It goes a little bit more further, and I would encourage you to read through this so that you can have, you know, someone who was not impaired or dealing with some sort of a medical issue at the time, so you can see what the facts are. The police officers provide these to you in a very detailed fashion. When they said that you were driving home from your place of employment, you know, ran off the road, causing the damage. You said you realized the car was total, so you left it and went on foot to a friend's house. At that point, you did not identify who that friend was. They stated that at that point you were still intoxicated and said you had been drinking after the accident and prior to returning home. So I would encourage you to go through that, because those facts, as I read them and went through them, are, you know, what gives me concern.
Yes, sir.
If there's no other questions, then Mr. Chair, I think we should probably go into deliberations and give some ground rules for that.
So, Dr. Davies, this is... application review. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I think, one, in looking at this, a couple of things kind of come to mind. Like, I think I would be very uncomfortable just granting licensure based on the information as it's presented today. I believe that the individual can be rehabilitated, could be an outstanding behavior analyst, which we desperately need in this state. But I think that the actions, and particularly the most recent actions that, you know, those have consequences, right? And so when I think about what I would need to see, I would need to see some sort of evaluation of this individual by an outside party, letting us know how significant or lack of significance there is around alcohol, recreational or illicit drugs in this individual's life, and some sort of assessment that would help us understand what a path forward may look like. I also think that, you know, with regard to that, you know, probably would want to see some sort of effort beyond current BACB requirements for CEUs, and we don't even have the right to give you requirements for CEUs yet that you're not, because you're not licensed, but I'd like to see some, at least 3 credits, if not 6, or let's say 3, in ethics and reporting accurately and taking the time to make sure that the statements you put forward are indeed factual. The next iteration of the code coming from the BACB, that's section 5. You know, you're making public statements. This document is public record. This recording is will be live in perpetuity, and that is problematic. So those are kind of my thoughts, Mr. Chair. I don't know if others have similar thoughts.
Are other committee members?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I second echo what Dr. Davey is suggesting. I do think that we need a kind of a fitness for duty evaluation. There's inconsistencies. I think there's still some level of denial and understanding, one, the significance of this, but also in understanding, you know, potential bigger issues that could be going on here. And so I really do think that we're lacking information to be able to move forward with making a decision. And so I would suggest that evaluation be coordinated with board staff so that we can determine with that information what decision or what direction we would like to go forward. But without that, I don't think we have all of the information.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, what I'm hearing from Drs. Davey and Davis-Wilson would be a recommendation to the full board to issue an interim order for a substance use evaluation and a fitness for duty. And once that the results of that evaluation are received and referred back to the committee can then decide how to move forward with the application. That may include a denial, recommendations that would be consistent with the evaluator's recommendations. It also could include possible CE for misrepresentations on the application. But I think what I'm hearing is the first order of business would be a recommendation to the full board for an interim order for substance use evaluation and a fitness for duty evaluation by a board approved provider.
Dr. Davis-Wilson, do you concur with that?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and make that a motion by saying so moved. Everything that Ms. Galvin summarized, I would make into a motion. And I think just to add to that, you know, Dr. Davey did mention the CEUs. While I would agree with Ms. Galvin that we aren't in a position to be able to require that now, my only question would be if he were to go and do that on his own, could we consider that as a task having been completed and accept it at a later time?
You could, but without the full picture of what is going on, hypothetically, it could be such that you would want to deny his application for licensure, and then he has gone out and completed CE and spent money, and he's still not going to get a license. So I would recommend for his benefit, for the committee's benefit, before we make that type of order or even a recommendation, let's have the evaluation completed so we know we have all of the facts at our disposal.
Perfect. Thank you. My motion does stand, as Ms. Galvin summarized.
I will second that motion. Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Any further discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? OK, Okay, motion carries. Would one of the board staff, or Ms. Galvin, would you provide a brief summary to Mr. Earl regarding what's happening and what's happening next?
So, Mr. Merle, the committee has made a motion to recommend to the full board that it issue an order for an interim order for an evaluation for you to assess any possible substance use disorder and to determine your fitness for duty. I am hoping, staff, that this could probably be on the next board agenda, which someone reminded me is November 5th.
November 5th. Next Friday.
Okay, so November 5th, it will be on that board's agenda. Based on my years of experience, I'm going to assume that the board is going to follow this committee's recommendation and that you would subsequently be issued an order for an interim evaluation by a board approved provider. You will receive notice of next Friday's meeting and you'll be able to call in and the board would give you an opportunity to participate in the discussion or answer questions at that time.
Okay.
If you have any other questions that come up after this meeting, you can contact Jennifer Michelson or Heidi Pekkanen.
Aye.
All right, thank you.
And can I just add to that please, you know, please attend to what the request is to the team. Don't Google it, do exactly what it is. And if you have questions, get back to board staff. Like, do not do something and spend money that is not going to get you further along in this process.
Yes, sir, Mr. Davey. Can I ask one question?
Oh, yes.
Would I said that we might be able to expedite the hearing to sometime in November. Would you, or potentially after January, would it affect anything if I tried to expedite that hearing or no?
Assuming the board agrees with the committee's recommendation for an interim order, that should have no bearing on how you proceed criminally.
Okay. It's a financial thing on my end. Sorry.
And unfortunately, the board just can't get involved in that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything else? All right. Thank you, Mr. Marrow, for attending.
Thank you.
All right. Okay. Let's move on to the next agenda item. Ms. Zaldivar, Ms. Denton, you have lead on this one, and I believe she is present just in case we need to have a conversation with her.
Mr. Chair, just a quick question. We are still going to try to take individuals that are on the line first, correct?
That's correct, yeah. Okay.
Thank you. Just want to make sure. Just trying to follow the program.
Thanks, Dr. David.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is an applicant that is coming forward with an additional request for information. So this was the first request. We have reviewed previously that she passed her exam in March of 2021. She graduated from ABA España with a Master's of Intervention in ABA in July of 2020. She did her supervision experience from January of 2020 to December of 2020. All supervision occurred in the state of Arizona with 1,560 hours. So I wanted to kind of recap that to remind the board where we are. The FAIR was sent over to the applicant in order to request additional information on the completion of the current supervised experience verification form by the supervisor and explain from the supervisor relative to the nature of the supervision received and how that supervision accrued during the pandemic. So specifically, on the application, we have an area to request if any modifications were made for that pandemic time. And while we cannot control for the pandemic or when we got our degree in relation to that, you know, we did have additional questions as a committee regarding, how the applicant would get a thorough understanding of their experience during a pandemic, having conducted all of your experience in the state of Arizona. Some of the questions came forth as far as We also practice in the state of Arizona, and we know how challenging it was to accrue hours. We know how many cancellations there were by families due to COVID. We understand these pieces. On the application, it was marked that there were no modifications made to the supervisory experience as a result of the pandemic, and that the applicant accrued the maximum amount of hours, 130 hours per month, in their supervisory experience. We did receive a letter from the supervisor. I do apologize if I am butchering names. Please feel free to correct me if you would like me to pronounce them the correct way. I apologize. It appears Eloisa is the supervisor who conducted the supervision. She wrote a very thorough and articulate letter explaining how she believed that the supervision was very appropriate. I don't deny that everything that was written in that explanation letter does appear to be a very thorough supervisory experience. I think my question at this point to the applicant is, would you mind explaining at this point a little bit about what that looked like from your own perspective? Not necessarily did you hit the number of restricted versus unrestricted hours, but more so, it was reported that in the letter by your supervisor, you had, you did not stop seeing clients. You took the necessary CDC regulations. You know, how much interaction did you have with clients during your supervisory experience? Are you available to speak to that? Hi.
Hi, my name is Nilvia Rodriguez. I speak Spanish speaking. My English is not fluent, but he's Vito. He can help me, please, and translate.
So we were wondering first if I could help her translate, or would all the information have to come directly from her?
I do not have a problem with that. Ms. Galvin, is that anything of concern?
What is your relationship?
I'm the case coordinator at the agency here. Mm-hmm.
Given this stage of the proceedings, I am okay with it.
Okay.
Okay, would you like me to repeat that in a shorter way?
Yeah, that's fine. Can you just repeat it, please?
Okay, so specifically, I would like the applicant to kind of describe for me what their supervisory experience looked like in relation to how much client-facing time she had, if that was really impacted by the pandemic.
We need to be able to hear you, sir.
I'm just going to repeat what I said in Spanish. Ellas te están preguntando cómo vas a describir la experiencia durante en la supervisión durante la pandemia. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mi supervisor me atendió por remoto. Mm-hmm. Ella observaba mi trabajo con el cliente y me daba indicaciones de acciones a trabajar y de estudiar, de revisar en el trabajo. Se montaron programas de la máscara, del uso del gel, que tanto yo implementaba, pero se le enseñaba al niño a hacer todo esto también.
Okay. So, the supervisor,
Eloisa Aranya,
the supervisor, what supervisor remotely, and they went over interventions as far as wearing the mask.
Apologies, I'm having a very hard time hearing.
Hi, can you hear me better now?
Yes.
Okay, so Eloisa Arandia, the supervisor, would attend remotely. Throughout the supervision, they implemented treatment programs such as wearing the mask, using hand sanitizers, washing the hands. They would implement those plans with the child. They would also go over like the terms and concepts of ADA so she can revise them and review them later. During her own study time. But as far as the experience through the pandemic, none of it was really affected as far as the hours would go. I think it was in June. In Julio, no? Yeah. So in June, 15 days, the father of the client was suspected. Mm-hmm. So the father of the client was suspected of being in contact with someone with COVID, so the services were stopped for 15 days or 2 weeks.
And all of this was in clinic or in home?
Yeah, this was in home. Mm-hmm.
Was so it for the same, were all 1,560 hours with the same individual?
Preguntan si todas las horas de supervisión de las 1,560 fueron con el mismo cliente.
Yes. The same client. He has aprobado 40 horas de terapia esta semana.
Hasta
abril. A partir de abril, 35 horas. Y yo trabajaba 8
o 7 días. So. Really, really quick. Are you using a laptop?
Yeah.
Okay, I think you have a directional mic. And so every time one of you talks, you're going to have to pivot it towards that person because it's made to block out noise away from you. So you're going to have to do this little dance with the laptop so that it's pointed directly at the person speaking. Sorry about that.
No worries. Leo, can I'm going to print it this way since I'm talking now. Pero dijo que hay como un micrófono aquí, entonces cuando vamos a hablar tenemos que ponerlo directamente en frente de nosotros. But what Nilvia said, she said up until April, she was working 40 hours a week with the client. That's what he was approved for by the insurance company. And from starting from April going onwards, he was approved for 35 hours per week. And she would work 7 to 8 hours daily with the client, with the same client in home services. She also has a spreadsheet of the ACB field work tracker. If she could also present it to you guys if you guys were interested in that.
I would definitely like some information from that. As we're reporting that we worked so many hours with the same client, we do have those restricted versus unrestricted expectations from the BACB. I'm not sure how deep I'm supposed to dive on this. So Ms. Galvin, please tell me if I'm diving too deep. So at this point, my question is, if you were working, 40 hours at one point, 35 hours at other points with the same client, how did she break up the direct, so that restricted hours versus the unrestricted hours?
Si trabajaba 40 a 35 horas por semana, ¿cómo es que dividió las horas restringidas y las horas que no están restringidas? Bueno, yo lo puedo apuntar para hacer para que ellos puedan expresar el rollo de vuelta.
Durante la sesión de trabajo, se hacían horas restrictivas y no restrictivas, a veces con supervisor, otras veces yo sola, y las no restrictivas fuera de sesión de terapia sin cliente, lo hacía yo en mi casa estudiando bajo las indicaciones de mi supervisora o temas a trabajar para hacerme analista, ¿no? Para prepararme como.
Entonces, las horas restringidas, no restringidas, así
se podía hacer dentro de gestión con cliente, bajo la, a veces con la supervisión.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So she said, Okay. So during the session with the client, so she would do the restricted and the unrestricted supervision with the client, sometimes with the supervisor, sometimes without them. And she would do like the non-restrictive supervision hours at home, going off the indications and the advice and the suggestions that supervisor Eloisa had recommended to her.
Mm-hmm.
She questions if it would be easier to present it if she would show you guys the spreadsheet.
I think before I make like an additional motion to request any further information, I would like to open the floor up to other committee members.
One question I had is, you know, it was indicated that the applicant was working 40 hours a week and then also 35 hours a week. If there's a consistent 40 hour a week work, that exceeds the, I believe, 130 hours allowed by the BACB per month. How is that handled where there wasn't an overage per month, given the hours that were reported?
Él dijo si estuvo trabajando 40 horas por semana con el cliente.
So we are unable to hear you.
Okay.
Tengo que repetirme porque no me pueden escuchar, pero ellos preguntaron si usted está trabajando 40 horas por semana, ¿cómo es que manejaron la situación? Porque eso sí va a pasar las 130 horas por mes.
Porque no todas las horas de la sesión se ocupaban para hacer la supervisión, para acumular las horas de supervisión. Es decir, en sesión yo podía tener una hora y media más, máximo dos, de supervisión, y las otras no, las otras trabajo como RBT con el niño. No, es decir, no usábamos toda la sesión, ni usábamos todas las sesiones, es decir, no todos los días yo tenía supervisión. Eso, y además la sumatoria de horas de supervisión también están en las no restrictivas fuera de sesión, que eran los estudios que yo hacía bajo la indicación de la supervisora. Es que también...
So she said not all the hours that they worked with the client were for supervision. Some of them were, and not every day was used with supervision either. So some of the hours she would work, some of the hours and some of the days she would work with supervision with the client, and then the rest she would work as an RBT. And she also mentioned that she would study in her free time. Well, and when she was not working with the client, she would study it based off the indications that the supervisor had given her.
Okay. Thank you. Other committee member, any other comments?
Just Dr. Davey, just comment, and I guess I'll wait to see. I would think just in request for further information, I think the supervisor is going to have to give us some detail here as well if it's signed off on the information, correct, Ms. Tenden? Okay.
That is the direction I'm moving.
Then I will defer to your brilliance.
Ms. Denton, would you, due to the need for further information, would you like to make a motion at this time?
I'd like to make a motion.
I said, why is Sandra
those of you who are on the call,
and Yuri are.
Ms. Montenegro?
And Yuri.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Chair, I would like to make a motion to move for a second request for additional information, specifically at this point, requesting a breakdown of the restricted versus unrestricted hours from the supervisor. I would also appreciate the BCBA tracker so that we could see if those two documents do align. My ultimate concern is if this was a supervisory experience under the appropriate parameters, you know, looking at the amount of potentially restricted supervision that could occur with one client, you know, I would just like to see, rather than doubting, how exactly that was met. so that we see that the appropriate case management, case oversight, the pieces that truly represent being a board certified behavior analyst were in fact covered during the supervisory experience.
I have a second for that. I'll second it.
May I clarify whether you're asking the supervisor to appear as well?
I think that would be very helpful, Ms. Kelvin.
I agree.
Okay, so Ms. Denton, is that your motion this time?
So moved.
Okay.
Would you like me to re-summarize?
No, I think we've got it for the record. All right, do I have a second? Okay, thank you, Dr. Davey. Any further discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Oh, Dr. Davey, it's
sort of unmute. I couldn't unmute myself, but it's still an aye. It's more of a procedural question after this. So aye.
Okay, thank you. Opposed?
I didn't say aye. Carried. Aye.
Okay, thank you. Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you.
Procedural question, Ms. Galvin, for this next one, do we want to bring in our own translators so that we don't have any potential risk around that?
Yes, I've already notified staff that that's a requirement.
Okay, thank you. Happy to provide it so that we don't have any issues, and that'll be wonderful.
Okay, thank you. All right. Board staff, do we need to provide a further explanation to the applicant? What's happening next?
I think she'll receive a letter that explains the next steps.
Okay.
All right. Vi una letra en que debemos hacer por la próxima vez.
Please thank the applicant for appearing and answering the questions. It's been very helpful.
Sí, pero yo creo para el futuro. So she had a question. So you guys want the supervisor to attend in a future date? Is that the November 5th date? No.
It is not. You'll be provided with the exact date and written communication.
Okay. Le van a mandar un email. Le van a mandar una letra de todos los que tiene que ser, la fecha, básicamente todo lo que van a ocupar. No creo, por ahora no.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. Okay, next applicant who's present, Briar Lopez. I need to disclose that I was Ms. Lopez's instructor during her program, her master's program, and Dr. Davis Wilson is recused from this. Dr. Davey, would you summarize the application for us?
Mr. Chair, if you would like to go through one of mine that is present.
Yes,
Mr. Chair, please. I had to deal with a little issue. I'll be right back.
Okay. So, let's move on then.
Or maybe this would be a good time to take a comfort break because Dr. Davey appears not to be 100% available. Dr. Davis Wilson is recused.
Okay. Thank you so much. Great idea, Ms. Galvin. All right, so let's take a comfort break and we will reconvene at 11 o'clock.
Yes, Mr. Chair, we can.
Okay, all right,
Mr.
so,
Chair,
yes.
I apologize. Can I take just a moment real quick since it is my students that are on the call? I just wanted to just quickly explain what a recusal means. So essentially, as we are seeing matters, if there's any a time in which there could be information that a board member has about other people or a relationship that they have shared or any type of even perceived, a perceived relationship, then it's best for that individual to consider a recusal, so removing themselves from the vote so that there's not any, or so that the vote goes through objective and fair. I just wanted to explain that to the students. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Davis-Wilson. Okay, so in also disclosure, Ms. Lopez was a student of mine during her time working on her master's degree. So Dr. Davey, go ahead and would you mind reviewing that for us?
Absolutely. Thank you, Dr. Stenhoff. So yes, Ms. Briar Lopez coming forward for licensure in the state of Arizona. She is currently a certified board certified behavior analyst at the national level. She has completed her application listing Arizona State University as where she earned her master's in science and applied behavior analysis with an emphasis in applied behavior analysis. She completed her application. I noted no issues in the application. She had supervised experience under two or three different supervisors, all here in Arizona, all at Autism Spectrum Therapies. We completed a multiple supervisor organization, all initial licensure issue dates, as well as BACB supervision training completed. We're in alignment with the start date of Mrs. Lopez or Ms. Briar Lopez's experience with the agencies. I see no issues with the application and believe it should move forward for full approval by the board.
Thank you, Dr. Davey. All right, next application is Tara Russell, and I'm the reviewer for that. Ms. Russell received her BCBA certificate in March of 2021. She graduated in April of 2010 from the University of Phoenix with an MS in psychology and received her behavior analysis graduate certificate from the University of Cincinnati in August of 2015. She received 1,742 hours of supervision under two supervisors in the state of Arizona who were LVAs at the time in the state. I did note on page 11 of the PDF, Ms. Russell did not complete the end date. So I'm assuming that could be a clerical change. And other than that, I don't have any other concerns and recommend that be forwarded to the board for full approval. And Ms. Russell, I noted that you were on the call, so I appreciate you being here for this. And then likewise, Ms. Lopez, also thank you for attending too. Okay, so next person that I can tell is present is Alexandra Montenegro, and I am also the reviewer for that application. Ms. Montenegro received her BCBA certificate in August of 2021. She graduated in April of 2019 from National University with a Master's of Science in Applied Behavior Analysis. She received 1,721 hours of supervision under a supervisor in California, which does not require licensure. I did not know any concerns with the application and I recommend that it be moved forward to the board to approve. Any comments on that? Okay. And Ms. Montenegro, I do appreciate you being here as well. Thank you for taking the time to attend. Next application, somebody who's present is Allison Standiford. Ms. Denton, you are the reviewer for that.
Mr. Chair, let me find you. Here we go. Ms. Allison Standiford passed her board certified behavior analyst exam on September 8th of 2021 after graduating from Arizona State University, their online program with a Master's of Arts in ABA, I believe. I also have listed on here FIT though. That might be a mistake of mine. Let me double check. If the applicant is present and would like to articulate that while I look, that is fine. I'm just looking for if they went to ASU or FIT because I have both. So I'm gonna make sure I present accurate information.
I went to ASU.
Okay, perfect. I blanked out FIT. All right, supervision dates were from January of 2020 to December of 2020. Under a licensed BCBA in the state of Arizona. It was under one BCBA across those months for a total of 1,557 hours in that year. As we know, the maximum required, or the maximum amount of supervision hours that can count is 130 per month. When you break that down per the dates of supervision that are listed, it was 129 per month. So when we look at that, it appears that each of the components have been met. I would open it up to the committee for any other feedback. Then I would move that this goes forward to the full board for approval.
All right, thank you. And Dr. Davey, I know that I skipped over one of your applications, and Ms. Foster, I apologize for that as well. So Dr. Davey, would you review Ms. Foster?
I'll restart my preamble. Ms. Foster, first off, thank you for joining us. And I know that you probably received notice early this morning that we would like to have you here just so we could clear up some issues within the application. So in review of the application, we have an individual coming forward for licensure who has worked here in Arizona. She is currently a board certified behavior analyst, became certified in August of 2021. Completed the application, noting Grand Forks, where she got a master's in art and psychology, and then NAU, Northern Arizona University, where she got her graduate certificate in positive behavior supports. Application continues to go on and is completed and signed, listing Avondale, Arizona as the site and location, site name ACES, where the individual has worked since October of 2018. And seems to have ended the employment there for the sake of supervision. You ended supervision there April 2022, noting 40 hours a week. Again, for those committee members, just noting that Avondale is the site location. Going further into the application, as we pull down into the supervisor information, if those following along at home with the PDFs, page 14 of 37, there's a couple of things here, and this is why I've asked that we reached out to Ms. Foster if she could comment on this. So I'm going to list off two of them that have to do with Supervisor Carlos Nuno in Arizona and Molly Maxwell. So date of initial state licensure is 10/29/19, according to this document. Supervision started sometime in October of 2019 as well. Highly unlikely that if this was to have started on the 29th, that in 3 days we would have totaled 92 hours. So there'll need to be some clarification around those timeframes as well as total hours. And so I think I'll go to the next one with Molly Maxwell. Again, this individual, the question really is around the time frame, again, becoming certified. I'm sorry, not around the time frame here, but becoming the actual idea of where the supervision occurred. So I think that that's, sorry, I'm trying to figure out how to thread this conversation here in a meaningful way. Let's take Nuno first. So Ms. Foster, can you kind of explain the start date and the initial state licensure date, and when you actually started with Mr. Nuno as a supervisor?
Okay.
Ms. Foster, yes. Ms. Foster, if I may, and Dr. Davey, I'm looking at Mr. Nuno's BACB certificate registry, and he was, I think it's on the document that we have, it's incorrect, the multiple supervisor document. Mr. Nuno's was originally certified by the BACB in 2015.
Correct.
And so it's just, there's,
it's not the BACB, it's the state licensure, which was 10/29/2019.
Okay, and he was issued a license, it looks like, in 2015.
Okay, so that is typed, so we have misinformation on that sheet from the applicant. Okay, so we will definitely need to get that cleared up. And then with your, let's go down to your California people then. So you've got several California supervisors. So can you talk to us about what that supervision looked like, entailed, knowing that you were in Arizona providing services?
So I, what happened was I was working for ACES in California originally. My husband got laid off and I transferred to the Arizona site. And I was also on maternity leave at the time. So that's why there's also like a gap in between hours. So what I was doing it in California, what I was having done was Lindsay Anderson was like my main sign-off person for my sheets, but I also was getting supervision from multiple people in the same organization.
So were they supervising you with respect to clients you were seeing in California or with respect to clients you were seeing here in Arizona?
So the ones that are licensed in California, they were seeing me with clients in California.
So you were servicing, in starting in February of 19 and then way back in 18, this work here is, and again, I'm looking at the documents. So starting with Courtney, Yichun, Joshua, Lindsay, Sandra, that work was done in California?
Correct. Yes.
Were you physically in California or was it telehealth?
I was physically in California.
So if that's the case that these service hours starting with the California supervisors, Megan, that would require these individuals not to have licensure in the state of Arizona. So one is all of these services here were conducted with non-Arizona residents. At that point, were you living in Arizona?
No. So from, let's see, when do we move? The baby was born in August. So we moved in October of 19 to Arizona. Before that, we were living in California and I was working in California.
So I think one of the things in terms, just board staff noting some areas that will need to be cleaned up, I would think under 24, we would want to have two items listed here. So we would want the time you were in California, start date, end date, site name, site location, for the California period. And then as you move into, even though it's still working for the same agency, you're at a different site location, giving us the information for your time in Arizona.
Okay.
That'll have to be cleaned up.
Dr. Davey, on page 14, it's on the multiple supervisors at one organization form. Mm-hmm. At the bottom, there is a footnote related to the hours. I don't know if that clears things up at all. Okay, just making sure.
I read it, but I also think the concern when I look at the what will be the public facing document is it lists all supervision activities in that time frame. Like if I reading that suggests, and which raised the question of having her here today, suggests that all of this occurred from 2018 to 2020 in Avenue.
Oh God, yeah.
And that's not the case, and that makes a big difference because my concerns were that we had individuals from California providing supervision in Arizona without licensure. It would also have essentially disallowed any of these total hours that are here. So I think in terms of an administrative process, that needs to be cleaned up.
Okay.
The typo with regard to the initial state licensure, Dr. Stenoff, can you reorientate me to Mr. Nuno's licensure statement?
Licensure is found on page 20 of the PDF.
Gotcha. I just wanted to make sure that I find that. Okay. So that typo as well on the multiple supervisor form would be appreciated. As well. If that can be cleared up, like those were my major concerns around this application is just making sure that looked correct. So I think that the two administrative fixes should address that. Any other committee members have questions or thoughts around those issues? Hearing none. All right. Board staff, questions around what we'd like to see to be able to move this forward?
Mr. Chair, Dr. Davey, we can begin corresponding with her perhaps as early as today, but certainly by early next week, and indicate specifically what we need to have corrected based on your discussion.
Okay. That'll be excellent. Thank you so much for being here. I will just say, Ms. Foster, your presence has probably, you know, saved you, you know, a month, maybe 2 months delay with us trying to sort that out and having to request additional information from you. So your presence here makes a huge difference. And right. I greatly appreciate you making the time to be here today.
No problem. Thank you.
So, Mr. Chair, with those corrections, I would say that we can go ahead and move. If those corrections are done in time for the full board meeting, then we can go ahead and move that forward.
All right, great. Thank you, Dr. Davey.
Thank you.
Okay, next agenda item back up to 5A3, Ms. Erbschlow. Dr. Davis Wilson, you are the reviewer for that.
Yes, Ms. Erbschlow passed her exam in November of 2019. She graduated from the ASU Masters in Education ABA program online. That was in May of 2019. She did her supervision hours in California, so no license was required. I did note that Supervisor Gray, who signed off on 217.5 hours, has a start date of August of 2018, but wasn't approved as a supervisor until October of 2018. So I wanted to recommend that we do a request for information and get that document, get clarification as to when that supervisor actually began supervision.
Okay, any further comments on that application from committee members? Okay, all right. Board staff, any questions about Dr. Davis Wilson's request? Okay, great, thank you. All right, next application is Brianna Gabbert. I need to disclose that I was Ms. Gabbert's instructor while she was working on her master's. Let's see.
Dr. Stenhall?
Yes, Dr. Davis Wilson.
I also need to disclose that I did teach one class with her. However, I do not note any concerns or any reason why I cannot review this application.
Great. Thank you. All right. So, Ms. Den, you're on review for this.
Hey. Ms. Gabbert passed her BCBA exam on September 7th of 2021. She graduated with her Master's in Science and ABA from Arizona State University in May of 2021. She received 1,084.41 hours under Dr. Adam Haas between October of 2019 and ending her supervision experience with Excel, multiple supervisors from Excel and the Bisto Center until June 25th of 2021. She totaled just over 1,500 hours in the state of Arizona, all by licensed behavior analysts. I do want to note that I got a little bit of enjoyment out of this application because Dr. Haas on his BCBA certification registry shows that the BACB made a mistake, and we all make mistakes, and I highly enjoyed it because the BACB says that Dr. Haas's BCABA certification expired in 1969. Just a fun tidbit. I see no reason why we shouldn't move Ms. Gabbert's application forward to the board for approval.
I'm sure Dr. Haas is relieved that he is not that old. So,
I giggled.
Yeah. So, okay.
I think we should pin a very strongly lettered word to the BACB pointing out their error. Yeah. Just didn't consign it, you know.
I don't want to be that rigid. I giggled. I'm not signing a letter.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure he's relieved to know that he doesn't have to go change all of his license and passports and so on. So good catch. All right. Next application is Ms. Vialta. Dr. Davis Wilson, you're the reviewer for that.
Yes, Ms. Vialta passed her exam in November of 2018. She completed a master's in organizational psychology in June of 2013, and then the ABA certificate from Cal State San Marcos in June of 2018. She did complete 1,500 hours, all in California, where licensure is not required. I do not note any concerns with this application and recommend it be forwarded to the full board for approval.
Thank you. All right. Next application is Jessica Leichwitz. Ms. Denton, you're the reviewer for that.
Absolutely. Ms. Leichwitz passed her board certified behavior analyst exam on November 7th. I double checked. They tested on the same day, my last applicant and this one. She graduated with a master's of professional studies in 2010 and then went through Kaplan University to receive her ABA coursework, even listed the verified course sequence as 4139, very thorough. She received her supervision from July 1st of 2020 to June 30th of 2021, all in the state of New York. Jason Lantier was certified and licensed in the state of New York during her time of supervision. She totaled 1,550 hours during her supervision period, which does break down per the supervision times to be 129 hours per month. Given this information, I did not note any concerns and would move that it goes forward to the full board for approval.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Denton. Next application is Jane Turner. Dr. Davy, you are the reviewer for that. As a note, Dr. Davis Wilson is recused from this application.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jane Turner comes forward seeking a licensure in the state of Arizona. She is a BCBA, has been one since June of 2021, also holds a Texas license as well. And I'm assuming, even though the document doesn't say it, that it would be, it is Texas licensure. Thank you. Rest of the application is completed, lists Arizona State University as the university where she earned a degree in a master's of education focused on applied behavior analysis. Application is completed. There is a listing of two supervised experiences towards certification, both at Intermountain Centers for Human Development. Supervisors are listed. Both supervisors are licensed in the state of Arizona and in good standing. Total hours of 1,500, and I would move this application forward for full approval.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Davy. Next application is Whitney Cromley. I'm the reviewer for that. Ms. Cromley received her BCBA certificate in November of 2019. She graduated in April of 2015 from Grand Canyon University with a Master's of Science in Psychology and received her certificate in behavior analysis from the University of California, Santa Barbara in September of 2019. She received 1,500 hours of supervision under two supervisors in California, which does not require licensure, and I did not note any concerns and would recommend that be forwarded to the board for approval. Okay. All right, next application is Kate Walker. Dr. Davis Wilson, you're the reviewer for that.
Yes, Ms. Walker completed her exam and passed her exam in May of 2021. She completed her coursework in May of 2018 from Ball State University with a master's in applied behavior analysis. She did over 1,500 hours in Michigan. The only clerical note that I would make is that one of the supervisors did answer yes to question number 9, indicating that they were licensed through the entire duration of supervision. That did not occur because we had determined that the Michigan licensure did not go into effect until January of 2020. So it's just clerical. We just need the supervisor to answer no to that question. But everything else looks good. And I would recommend that provided that edit is made, we move this forward to the full board for a recommendation of approval.
All right, great. Thank you. All right, next application is Megan King. Ms. Denton, you're the reviewer for that?
Absolutely. Ms. King passed her BCBA exam on October 2nd of 2021. She graduated with a Master's of Arts in ABA from Ball State in May of 2020. She received all of her supervision in Indiana, where there is no licensure requirement at this time, from August 2018 to July of 2020. She totaled way above the required amount for the BACB with 2,778 hours of supervision experience. Given that there are no licensure requirements for supervision in Indiana, and she completed a copious amount of supervision and completed a verified course sequence during the appropriate time, I see no reason why this shouldn't move forward to the full board for approval.
All right, thank you. All right, next application is Jesus Belmonte. Dr. Davey, you are the reviewer for that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So Mr. Belmonte comes forward seeking licensure in the state of Arizona. He is currently a board certified behavior analyst, has been since September of 2020. Applicant completed application, noting that they studied at the University of Cincinnati, got a master's in education and foundations in behavior analysis. Individual went on to complete the application in its entirety, listing two places of employment, as well as a supervised experience towards certification, four of those, all of this occurring in California under the supervision of BCBAs. There is no licensure, as has been previously noted on this in this meeting, in the state of California. The hours add up, the time frame is appropriate, and therefore this, I believe this can move forward for approval.
All right. Thanks, Dr. Davey. Next item is Laura Rivera. Dr. Davis Wilson, you're the reviewer for that.
Yes, Ms. Rivera completed and passed her exam in July of 2020. She did a master's in science from in psychology from Phoenix University. She and then graduated in June of 2012. She did an ABA graduate certificate from the University of California, Santa Barbara in March of 2020. She did just over 1,500 hours from the state of Michigan, where licensure was only required more recently, and all of the supervisors filled out the forms accordingly. I did not note any errors on this application and would recommend it be forwarded to the full board for approval.
Dr. Davis-Wilson, on just a question, and I might be wrong on this, but on page 3 of the PDF under the general information, number 19, it was marked NA. Should that be a yes, no response? I don't remember what we've done in the past on that.
Did we lose her? I might have lost her.
Okay. Oh, nope, I muted myself.
Oh, okay.
Just continued to talk to myself. You said page 3.
Yeah, it's the did you complete the 270 classroom hours, and it was marked NA, and I know it's provided, but I don't remember how we've dealt with that in the past, but
we have I don't know why. Oh, I know why. I opened up the supplement, not the actual thing. So I was like, there is no page 3. Give me just 1 second. In the past, what we have done is, why is it only showing me this supplement? Oh, there it is. In the past, what we've done is just requested the clerical error. I appreciate you for catching that. I did not catch that. But we do, because she answered no to 18, we do need a response to 19.
Okay.
Thank you. So I amend my recommendation and recommend that the board staff reach out to the applicant for a revised answer to question number 19. And if they get that in time for the meeting, to go ahead and forward it to the full board for approval.
Okay, thank you. Next application is Elizabeth Dodd. Ms. Denton, you're the reviewer for that.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Dodd passed her exam in July of 2021. She graduated from the University of New Orleans with a master's in science and psychology in May of 2019, and then completed her ABA certification from Florida Institute of Technology in May of 2021. She had supervision from January of 2019 to January of 2021, all happening in the state of Louisiana. Two BCBAs oversaw her supervision experience in Louisiana. Both of them were licensed in good standing in the state of Louisiana for the duration of the supervision experience. She completed just over 1,500 hours with 1,507 hours of supervision experience. I did not note any concerns with this applicant, and unless there is any clerical errors that I missed that someone else might have caught, I would move that this goes forward to the full board for approval.
Thank you. Next application is Leah Fairweather, and I'm the reviewer for that. Ms. Fairweather received her BCBA certificate in September of 2021. She graduated in May of 2021 from Arizona State University with a Master of Arts in Special Education, Applied Behavior Analysis. She received 1,500 hours of supervision under a licensed behavior analyst. And I did not note any concerns with this application and recommend it be forwarded to the board for approval. Next application is Amy Turner. Dr. Davis Wilson, you're the reviewer for that.
Yes, I apologize. Ms. Turner passed her exam in May of 2018. She graduated from Aurora University, getting her master's in applied behavior analysis in May of 2018 as well. She did complete 1,500 hours in Illinois. I did not note any concerns with her application.
All right, thank you, Dr. Davis Wilson. Next application is Chelsea Burgos. I'm the reviewer for that. Ms. Burgos received her BCBA certificate in November of 2019. She graduated in May of 2019 from Arizona State University with a Master's of Education, Curriculum and Instruction, with an emphasis in applied behavior analysis. She received 1,500 hours of supervision under multiple supervisors in the state of California, which does not require licensure. I did not know any concerns with this application, recommend it be forwarded to the board for approval. So, all right, let's move on to the next section. So behavior analyst applications for licensure by universal recognition. Emily McRae is present if we need to ask her any questions, but Dr. Davis Wilson, you're the reviewer for that.
Thank you. Yes, Ms. McRae is applying for licensure by universal recognition. She has supplied all of the documents. She has supplied all the documents required by the board for this. In review of the documents, everything looked good. Residency looked good. I was noting her Massachusetts license, where she is licensed in Massachusetts in good standing. And they actually have her listed as an assistant behavior analyst. I looked at her BCBA certification, and it does not appear that at any time she had certification as a BCABA. So I'm wondering if it's possibly clerical on Massachusetts side. But I don't know, Ms. McRae, are you able to speak to that?
I was never an assistant behavior analyst, and as I worked under my licensure since 2016. So I've never been an assistant behavior analyst. It's always been board certified behavior analyst.
That's what I thought. And that's what I assumed. I do have a question, though. Do you happen to have a copy of your Massachusetts license? I know we do the verification. Okay. Yeah. And does that the copy you have show assistant?
Yes. No, it doesn't show assistant. It shows behavior analyst.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess my question is going to be to board staff and Ms. Galvin. I know that we try to do first party verification, but it does look like the other board may have made a clerical error. How should we proceed?
Perhaps staff between now and the next meeting could reach out to the other board and seek clarification.
Okay. And I can recommend that. And Ms. McCray, I thank you for being here. Unfortunately, the way that our statutes are written, we do have to get that information from the other board. So you're welcome to supply board staff with what you do have. And then perhaps while board staff also reach out and get clarification from Massachusetts, that perhaps you can reach out to them as well and see why they issued a letter saying you're an assistant behavior analyst.
Yeah, I mean, I can submit my licensure to you guys, and we had to go through the governor's office to even confirm that you guys received the verification. So I haven't been able to get a hold of anyone in that actual office.
And Ms. Galvin, my history with that board is similar. That's why I was kind of concerned. I have on for other unrelated, obviously reasons, tried to correspond with that board regarding licensure in Massachusetts for my staff, and getting responses back has been next to nothing. And so I think perhaps we try that route with board staff, but does that then mean we've just got to wait for an alternative?
I think Heidi was going to...
Yeah, so I'm wondering if we can approach it from this angle. So we have an official verification of licensure that appears to contain an error. Could we not augment that information with what we are able? I'm trying to pull it up online, but I probably need more time to study this website given its construct. But if we're able to find information online that matches in terms of the name, the license number, and the online verification accurately reflects that she is a licensed behavior analyst, could that not be used for the file?
I would think that would be appropriate given the inability to reach the other board.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, yeah. Committee members, this is Kathy. If I may, I looked it up and just sent it to Heidi by IM. It does list her as an applied behavior analyst, not an assistant.
Okay. And honestly, it would make no sense, because at first I thought, well, maybe she was formerly a BCABA and maybe, you know, but there's no indication that she ever met the BCABA requirements. All of her documentation is very clear that she has only been a BCBA. So I think if their registry shows that she is a BCBA or a licensed behavior analyst, maybe that'll suffice. And I don't know if Ms. Galvin, for the record, we still want to try to reach out to the board anyway, just so that we can note that we did, but this has been a historically very difficult issue with that particular board.
I think perhaps if staff could just send one last email to see if there's a response, but then it does look like they have obtained corroborating evidence to show she's fully licensed.
Excellent. I appreciate that. Then my recommendation would be that occur, that board staff please work to try to get a revised letter for the file. Please save the information that you have found. And if we are able to demonstrate that she was licensed in good standing as a behavior analyst, not as an assistant, then I would recommend her application be forwarded to the full board for approval.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Davis Wilson.
Can I ask for clarification on this? Yes. So yes. In terms of billing and my job status and everything with the company, what do what needs to happen on my end and where do I stand and what do I report to them in terms of billing and CPT codes and sign-offs and clinical supervisory.
So at this time, you are still not eligible to practice independently. You are able to practice under the supervision of somebody else, and that will be up to you and your employer to review the statutes related to that. But the practice and title act that we have basically just limits your ability to practice independently as a behavior analyst or to hold yourself out as an independent behavior analyst. So your consumers would not, if I were to tomorrow call your consumers and say, hey, who is your behavior analyst? They should be identifying your supervisor, not necessarily you, because you are not licensed to practice. We are hoping to get something in place as far as board staff working this week so that your application can be reviewed at the November 5th meeting, but they will be in touch with you on what that'll look like. Today, no applications get approved. So everything is just recommendations. All of the applications we've reviewed today will be seen on November 5th. So anybody who, even if we said, yeah, we recommend that this be approved, people would still need to wait till November 5th for an official board vote before they're able to practice independently in the state of Arizona. So you can relay back to your employer that there was a clerical error that we are working through, and board staff will continue to keep you abreast of what we're finding.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Okay. Next application is Lauren Krowitz. Ms. Denton, you're the reviewer for that.
Thank you. Ms. Krowitz comes forth seeking licensure in the state of Arizona via universal recognition. She passed her exam in August of 2019. She graduated in May of 2016 with a Master's of Science in ABA from Mercyhurst University in Pennsylvania. She received all of her supervision in Pennsylvania. And looking at this, I did have a question. I was a little bit unsure about this one. She is licensed in Pennsylvania as a behavior specialist. It does appear this is the closest license to a behavior analyst license, but the requirements for licensure in Pennsylvania are not synonymous with our licensure requirements in Arizona. There is no degree requirement. No examination requirement. There is a master's degree requirement, a year of experience, 2 hours of continuing education. And, you know, it does go on to articulate some 90 hours of evidence-based coursework. Ms. Galvin, perhaps you can respond to this. Does it matter if it is a behavior specialist license, if the things don't quite align?
You know, I'm not familiar with that status of licensure. I guess I would leave that up to the committee to review the requirements, the curriculum, to see if things align in your opinion after your assessment. I have not heard of that licensure term in the past.
It's not a licensure term. That's the issue. It is strictly a certification. It's not licensure. And therefore,
it is a license.
Under the
Professional Licensing Board and Commissions.
But what is actually granted to them? Like the documents.
There is a document.
Hold on. I've got this flagged on multiple occasions here.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, committee members, may I? I've looked this up in the past. I've come across it, and the BACB does not recognize the Pennsylvania license for as a inequivalent license. They do not require BACB certification, I believe.
Which is a requirement for us. Yeah.
So as a result, this would mean that we would need to send a letter of additional information or asking them to submit a standard application for licensure?
Mr. Chair, if I may, the problem with this is that universal recognition, we actually can't go through and say, hey,
we require BACB certification, but they don't, and we require these, but they don't. We have to determine whether or not they are able to practice at the same practice level in their state. And so I think we would have to weed that out first. The Pennsylvania, I think Dr. Davey, it's Ohio that just does the certification. The Pennsylvania is a licensure and they just call it behavior specialist. And it is written in the statute as license. And so the question would be is, based on that application, is that individual licensed to practice? Keeping in mind that our statutes also don't require you to maintain certification. We require it at the onset of licensure, but we don't require you to maintain it. And so the question isn't whether or not the standards were synonymous. The question is, do we have evidence to believe that they're licensed at the same practice level, which was kind of the concern that I had with the prior application, is the license didn't show the same practice level, but does this indicate the same practice level?
It does appear to be so based off of the information that I have gathered. As you mentioned, it is an actual license. It comes from the Bureau of Professional and Occupational Affairs in Pennsylvania. It is listed as a license. They review disciplinary actions. Whenever you look up, like, what is BCBA licensure, it comes up as behavior specialist. And I mean, that is just a Google search, so don't take it as anything like binding. But it does appear to be this. I mean, what we could do if we are just guessing and stabbing at this is we could get a board staff reach out to the Bureau of Professional and Occupational Affairs in Pennsylvania and confirm that this is the same practice level.
Person is able to practice behavior analysis at the independent level.
So my concerns are as follows, and maybe we can figure out how to ask this question as well. To Diana's point, right, we require BACB certification as the entry in. We do not require it ongoing. Well, I would think that, you know, as an entry point in, this individual need to have that, right? So we see that within their license. Two, I would like to better understand when we discuss with them what the issue is with regard to, and maybe it's a question that we fire over to the BACB, Ms. Backnown, of why is this not recognized? So that we could be informed at least of to their points as well. So we would get it from both sides. We'd hear it from Pennsylvania as to why we believe this is a like piece of, you know, like licensure, and we could hear why the BACB has concerns around it. So we could maybe weigh those two areas. Mm-hmm. Would that be appropriate, Ms. Galvin, so that we have both pieces of the puzzle?
Yes, just continue this for a bit and allow staff to conduct that follow-up.
And then I think there's been some changes recently to the Pennsylvania law. They updated some stuff like in 16. I don't know if they've updated things since then, where they were trying to get around some of the hours and training that were required. So just when we speak to them, if there have been other updates that may not be on their website, that we would be able to have access to that as well.
As a result, I'm not sure how to make a motion for what the committee would like. Do I need to be the person that makes the motion?
I think the discussion has given staff, I believe, sufficient direction on what information is needed, and then a consensus that we'll table it until staff reports back.
Perfect.
Great.
And Heidi, you're good?
I am. Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Can I just point out one other thing? I think it's also important to note that PENABA, which would be the equivalent to ASIABA, is actually working on a bill to have licensure for behavior analysts. So there must be some disconnect there, that the state organization would be pushing a bill, you know, in 2020, 2021, looking to be able to get said licensure for behavior analysts.
Due to conversations that are occurring at this level, at this venture.
I think it's important to note that PENABA obviously has some concerns around it as well, which would be our sister to ASIABA. who we work very closely with on this committee and with the board.
Okay.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, for me, it'll be helpful to go through this process because I agree with Dr. Davey. It's very interesting. It's very interesting the way that their language is crafted. And it's my understanding historically that special education teachers and other types of specialists in this realm could also carry this license. And so I think the challenge there is, again, because it's universal recognition, it's not clear how we would craft kind of that definition of same practice level, because we can't just go by the master's degree. So I think this will be a good kind of exploration to help us understand it. But I agree with Dr. Davey. This Pennsylvania has historically been a quite interesting little niche.
Yeah. So the other thing I would just say for the applicant's sake is they're going about this through Universal. They may want to just complete an application with their PCP hours. This could take us some while to weed through. I mean, just to Diana's point, like it's going to be very hard for us to reconcile our application that requires, 270 plus hours of coursework with the fact that this program requires essentially a master's degree in a litany of areas and then 90 hours of evidence-based coursework in ABA to be able to access this. So that's going to be a hard thing for us to probably reconcile in one call and not special meetings. So could we also make the recommendation to this individual to go about this in the old school fashion as well, so we have two paths, or can we not have two open applications at once?
Dr. Davey, my only concern with that, but this can probably be vetted by board staff, is to ensure that this individual does have the 270 hours, which we're assuming so because she signs her name BCBA, but depending on when she did the requirements, she could have fallen into the not applicable. But then also that she did 1500 hours, because if she did the 750, this would not be universal recognition may be her only avenue. But I do agree that it's worth trying. Like it's worth having the conversation with her and saying, hey, do you have 1500 hours? Did you do your coursework after January of 2015? Cool. You might want to try this route instead. But then I agree that would be a procedural question of if they determine that could be an avenue for this applicant, do they have to withdraw their universal, or what would that look like?
Yeah. Okay. Since we can't have two applicants.
I would definitely want Ms. Galvin to weigh in on this because I know we have had some conversation around sort of this, taking a dual strategy, toward achieving a license and, potentially having two open applications at the same time. We have this one that's been submitted. So that gives you jurisdiction over this individual on this matter. And so, I would really need, here she is. Maybe she's prepared to comment more effectively than I am.
No, I agree with Heidi that this is the application before you. You've given staff direction on how to proceed, and not always the committee or the board's place to advise applicants on, alternatives. Let's see where we can get with this application as presented with additional follow-up by the staff.
Fair enough.
Okay. So any more discussion on that application? Okay, so I'd like to move forward, and would somebody be willing to provide a motion for 5A and B?
I think 5B, we know where we're headed. We just need a motion on
A?
Yeah, or 1, B1.
B1, okay. So a motion for B1, and then we'll make a motion for 5A and the applicants for that.
I believe the motion for B1 was to direct board staff to develop or find the information pertinent to confirm that the licensee is licensed in good standing
at the same practice level? And if so, that we move this forward to the full board for approval.
Okay. Do I have a second for that?
I will second that.
Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Motion carries. And then would somebody be willing to make a motion for the applicants under A? Well, I think we did one, but 2 through 21.
I'll make that motion.
Motion to move forward in the way discussed.
Okay. Yep. Are we good with that? Okay. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
All right. Any discussion? All right. All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye, but I would like to note that I do have two recusals.
Thank you, Dr. Davis-Wilson. Okay. Opposed? Okay. Motion carries. All right. Agenda item number 6, discussion, consideration, possible action regarding state of emergency temporary license application. Ms. Pakanon, you're lead on this discussion, and I believe the person of listed on here is also on the call.
Yes, Mr. Chair, we did invite the applicant to be present to address any questions that you might have. I'm bringing this temporary license application before you because it is not a clear-cut situation in terms of eligibility, and I'll attempt to explain why I determined that to be the case. So there is a statute that enables health profession boards to establish a temporary license opportunity should the board deem it was appropriate to do so. This board did not establish a temporary license for some time, but elected to do so under the auspices of the declared state of emergency for COVID-19. So when the board established this opportunity for temporary licensure, the board had articulated very clearly that the purpose of this license was to permit out-of-state licensees to practice via telehealth in Arizona in order to address client needs during the state of emergency. So this application that's presented to you indicates that Ms. Atwood, she is domiciled, has a residence in Arizona, and she has affirmed that in communications to me, but that she is employed in California and only in California at this time. That was, again, not a clear-cut set of facts to me to determine that she was, in fact, eligible for this license. Another potentially complicating factor is that Ms. Atwood has applied, as I've indicated, for the unrestricted license. That application is open and incomplete at this time, and it's our understanding that she is working to complete the application to submit documentation that she has fulfilled the requirements. We can't discuss the application, the unrestricted application for licensure. That is not how this matter is agendized. We're only discussing whether she is, in fact, eligible for the temporary license. The board did delegate to me the authority to grant temporary licensure when the requirements have clearly been met. Because of my questions relative to this application and the circumstances that I have described, I'm bringing it to the committee for a recommendation, which then can be forwarded to the board. But I did not feel that, based on the questions that were raised in my mind anyway, that I could approve the application under the authority that was delegated to me. I'm happy to answer any questions, and hopefully that summary is as clear to you as I intended it to be.
Thank you, Ms. Pakanon. Committee members, comments?
I think it's dead on. I think she can continue to get some more information. I don't think she's using her power, exactly how we'd want it, right? It doesn't seem to be like something that we're just going to grant. There seems to be extenuating circumstances that require additional information. So I think that for this applicant, that Ms. Bacchanon should continue on her merry way and see what kind of clarity we can gain.
Thank you, Dr. Davey. And Mr. Chair, one piece to add to this is that I believe that when the board established this application, that in doing so, it was not intended to be a bridge to a full and unrestricted license. I've had conversations with other applicants who have open applications. They are clearly living in Arizona and in many instances working in Arizona. And so they were supplied with this temporary application often by their employer with the recommendation, submit this and that may achieve, your licensure status in an expedited fashion while your other application file becomes complete. So I've had lots of conversations with BCBAs filing that type of application and seeking that kind of expedited consideration, if you will. In every case, the applicant has acknowledged they didn't understand the intent of the temporary emergency application and withdrew that application in order to avoid a possible denial.
Any other comments? Okay, and I agree with Dr. Davies' comments too. Is that we need to continue vetting this out, and Ms. Pakanon, if you don't mind, continue sorting this out a bit. Okay.
Ask your questions.
Ms. Atwood, please.
Thank you. So. Between temporary license and full license, if there are issues and I've been licensed in other states, I would have to work out of state for a full year under those licenses before I could perform any BCBA work in Arizona. Is that correct?
Just to understand for universal recognition, is that what you're saying?
Right. I guess I'm confused on all the process. Because I applied, but then there were questions about my supervisors. And I know that I can't go all the way there, but there were questions on my supervisor's license in Tennessee. So I went ahead and started working in California, and then I got a verbal approval from Tennessee. I'm just waiting for them to get my fingerprints and send me my license so that I can go back home and work in Tennessee. But from what I was gathering, I would have to work out of state for a year before I'd be eligible to apply for, universal recognition? You have to have a license like a long time, right?
Yeah, I believe it's yes. You do. You have to have a license in another state for, is it 1 year?
Yes.
Okay. And so,
but what's on the table, Ms. Atwood, is your temporary application for emergency temporary licensure,
yes.
Not universal.
I just wanted to ask,
because
this is the only opportunity I have to ask,
to
know which way to go to apply.
That is a conversation that's probably more suitable to have with staff outside of this meeting. And you can reach Heidi, later today or on Monday or Tuesday.
Okay. Yes, early next week. Thank you.
All right. Anything else related to this item?
So, Mr. Chair, would it be the committee's suggestion then that I also correspond with Ms. Atwood for purposes of determining whether she wishes to withdraw this application, mm-hmm. in order to, again, not have a possible denial of application, which of course is a reportable action to the BACB and to the National Practitioners Data Bank?
Yes, please.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Ms. Atwood, thank you for attending the meeting as well. So appreciate
it. Thank you. I apologize for my ignorance on the process.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Agenda item number 7, discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding telehealth advisory committee on the telehealth best practices. Dr. Davey?
Thank you. There's really nothing to report. We don't have another meeting until later next. I think it's still 2 weeks out. So okay. No report at this time.
All right. Thank you. Agenda item number 8, discussion, consideration, possible action regarding recent updates from the Behavior Analyst Certification Board, BACB. Ms. Pakanon?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and I apologize. I just noticed a numbering error with respect to the materials that are in your folder, but hopefully you were able to figure out how those materials correlate to the agenda. So we just really have one update from the BACB, and it consists of the long-awaited update with respect to the temporary waiver for observation with a client, which they've announced will be lifted as of January 1, 2022. And I don't have any other updates to share at this time.
Okay, thank you. Let's see. Agenda item number 9, discussion, consideration, possible action regarding the out-of-state telehealth practice registry established at ARS, section 36-3606. Ms. Pakanon?
Yes, Mr. Chair. So the registry is finally launched as of essentially less than 48 hours ago. I don't have that up on our website, but intend to do so very soon. There's some content that I need to develop before I actually post the link. And I think that, I want to be thoughtful about that. So I'm giving, because this is so novel, I want to give, good instruction to anyone who is considering making application to the registry. One additional comment, I do think that the board needs to have some discussion around the launch of the registry, the implementation of the registry. We are still, as an agency, accepting applications for the temporary emergency license. And they're very distinct, the registry and the emergency license. The emergency license, there's no fee. The requirements are quite minimal. The responsibility for determining eligibility is largely delegated to me, with some exceptions, as you've just noted. But with the registry, there is a fee of $600. There are additional requirements that have to be submitted, some of which, may entail the applicant actually, qualifying for, certain eligibility. So I think the board needs to weigh in terms of, how are we, is the board going to continue offering both opportunities, or might the solution be that the board discontinues accepting the temporary emergency licenses? In other words, discontinuing the waiver that was approved by the Department of Health Services, because along comes this new statutory requirement for the registry. So in essence, should the registry then replace temporary emergency licenses? Or again, do those two things continue to be offered concurrently? So I really feel like I need some board direction on that. And that's probably really confusing, but let me know if you have any questions and I'll try to clarify what I just explained. All
right. Thank you.
I do think that it was helpful to actually have the agenda in this order, given that you just explained a little bit about that temporary license and kind of the motivation for establishing that and the intent. I think that it does cause confusion for potential licensees in that application process. If there is no intent to approve a temporary license for anything other than you know, for that practice of an out-of-state telehealth practitioner who could assist in the public health emergency, then it would make sense to me if this new rule and statute moves to replace that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that input. I'm happy to, you know, forward that on to the board. I think to, you know, help them try to resolve this as well. So, yeah, it's a complex issue, and we sort of have these overlapping kinds of permissions, and you know, this vast expansion of telehealth practice is it does introduce some degree of complications where implementation is concerned. And just by way of you know, an update, we only have at this time 41 temporary emergency licensed individual behavior analysts. So the numbers for the psychologists are considerably higher. We're over 600 at this point, with many open applications still pending. So in terms of, you know, the quantity or the impact on behavior analysis, it's not substantial, but you know, that's something just to keep in mind.
Okay, any other comments from the committee on that item? Okay, thank you, Ms. Pakenham. And you're up again with agenda item number 10, a discussion, consideration, possible action regarding recommendations for revisions of the statutes that regulate the practice of behavior analysis in Arizona, ARS Title 32, Chapter 4, Article 4.
Mr. Chair, I'm happy to cue up the material. I don't know if the committee, because this is probably going to be, the next two discussions are going to be somewhat involved. If this is a good time to, well, I pull that up to do a comfort break, but if everyone's ready to dive in, I certainly am.
Does anybody need to do or have a comfort break?
Okay. Well,
okay, let's wrap it.
Do this. Let's make sure I start at the very beginning. So this is a summary of essentially the sort of discussions that this committee has had over many months, much of which occurred during your special meetings with stakeholders. I've captured any indications where you have where you have noted that a statute revision may be warranted to recommend to the board to pursue. Of course, this would have to be any changes to the statutes would have to be done by the Arizona State Legislature and approved by the governor. So it is a process. And what I'm going to recommend is, as the committee's looking at what I've captured and as the committee identifies other possible changes, please think about it in terms of, are these changes really critical to attempt to move forward perhaps in 2022, the 2022 session? Or might they be changes that maybe they aren't so critical and they can be held for a future time? I really don't have a whole lot of insights into what the 2022 session might involve, but I just sort of think that maybe this is, if these aren't critical, maybe it makes sense for this agency to sit out a session, given that in the two previous years, we have had to run legislation. So maybe we want to take a break and consider diving in the future. So I'll just go ahead and work through these page by page. But again, if you identified any other possible changes that you want to discuss, please stop me and we'll make sure we pause at the place that you need me to. Of course, in 32.2091 definitions, there was some discussion about striking this sentence, which prescribes what behavior analysis is not. I think that's probably something that at some point you want to see that language go away. But any input, please chime in.
No, I think it's still the same. Like it, we're the only ones that say what the hell we don't do. Like, it seems,
you know, my input. Too. Yeah, my input is yes, please.
Okay.
Yes, please.
So then moving on to the next possible edit, there was discussion, of course, replacing person with client. And I suspect that's still the committee's wishes. I didn't record anything else in definitions, but stop me if you need me to. Okay, hearing nothing. Fees, we didn't previously discuss any revisions to this statute.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Packett, and Mrs. Kathy. On the fees, did we want to discuss at all about the staff discussion about issuance of an initial license fee?
Great question, Kathy. So just to give the committee some context around that, board staff will be recommending that the board consider eliminating the license issuance fee. The rationale for that is that it's revenue that we don't need. Many boards instead simply require an application fee, which then extends to any, you know, post-board action, post-board granting of the license, if you will. So rather than having this additional transaction and an additional fee, I think the fee was justified once upon a time when technology didn't easily facilitate the granting of a license. So there was some effort on the part of board staff to push out a license, to grant a license. With the tools that we have now, I just don't think that fee is really continues to be justified. And again, we don't need this revenue to cover the cost. So that's the board will definitely have that discussion, but I'm interested in what the committee's thoughts are on this topic.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I think, you know, with some fees like that, it becomes, you know, more costly to administer than to just issue it, you know? So I would be in support of just discussing that with the board as our recommendation as well.
Excellent. Thank you for that. And, you know, it may only be a delay of, you know, 48 hours or 72 hours for the exchange of that, for that transaction to happen, but it does delay individuals from starting to practice under their newly minted license. So I think we'd like to see that turn around faster.
Mr. Chair, committee members, if I may add to that. One of the other issues is that we do not have in statute or rule an expiration of an approval. So someone can get an approval, it stays on file forever. They can come back in a year and request issuance of the license. It did in fact just happen. I have an applicant who's a psychologist who I am issuing the license today because it sat there for a year and she was now ready to be licensed. And I have no, there's nothing to stop that. So removing the issuance, the fee, gives staff the ability to issue a license upon board approval rather than there be any exchange beyond that between the applicant where they have to pay the issuance fee. I hope that was clear.
Ready to move on. I think I'm not hearing anyone protest the possible renewal of that fee. So very good. Moving on then to 2091.02, qualifications of applicant. I don't remember any changes to that statute. Does anyone want to jump in with some comments here? Okay, hearing none. Moving on to educational and training standards for licensure. So back at your January stakeholder meeting, the committee recommended striking the language that I've indicated with the red strikeout. And I think we're all clear as to why that can go away. Any other questions or comments? You want to revisit that? Okay, great. So reciprocity. I think that we're going to have maybe more discussion around this when we get to the rules. So you clearly have statutory authority to establish a pathway to licensure through reciprocity endorsement, but there is no board rule at this time that really outlines that pathway effectively. So any other comments to that effect?
So just a quick question on, and maybe we discussed this last time, is Ms. Galvin still with us? And if not, I can hold. My question is like reciprocity versus universal recognition. Like, when we get right down to it, what are the critical differences there?
Mr. Chair, Dr. Davey, I think that what's different about universal recognition versus what I would consider a true endorsement or a reciprocity pathway is that you still have the ability through endorsement or reciprocity to evaluate the educational qualifications. You still have the ability to ascertain, you know, were the required examinations taken and passed. Universal recognition sort of, it removes that authority away from you. And I'm sure you can think of applications where, you know, that's been quite apparent. With endorsement and reciprocity, you're actually still doing a substantive evaluation of a person's education, credentials, and training.
That's we have a little bit more. Yeah, so we have a little bit more oversight under reciprocity than we do universal recognition. And I think it's got to stay here for as a placeholder.
And this is Jean. I don't know if you can hear me. I can't get my video to go back on. I have very unstable internet at the time. But I heard what Heidi said, and I agree with her as far as giving the board more authority to review under reciprocity to ensure that the qualifications are nearly identical to what's required in Arizona.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I would recommend that the committee, the board will want to, you want this authority, whether you, you know, implement it through a rule is up to you, but I wouldn't think that you'd want this authority to go away.
Thank you.
Okay, then. So moving on to 2091.06, temporary licenses and active status reinstatement. So much of this statute is a mirror of the psychologist's statute. I don't know the citation to the corollary statute, but I don't remember any proposed changes to this one. Does anyone have any thoughts about it? So 2091.07, this is there's a lot of stuff in here, active license issuance, renewal, expiration, continuing education. I do think that if we were to ever submit, or in the future, if we were to submit a request to have some statutory changes, the staffers who draft those changes would probably strike these dates beginning May 1, 2017 because they are in the past, but that's just sort of a cleanup. I don't think it's critical. I would just leave that up to their expertise, but I don't remember any extended, we did have one edit. Oh yes, this was a clarification that state or national behavior analysis ethics committee should more accurately and clearly state a nationally recognized certification board, the BACB. So that is the one change that you suggested here. Any others? Then 2091.
Oh, back on the continuing ed, just back for 1 second. Continuing ed. Where's the continuing ed section? Can you scroll to that? Application show. And this is, we don't have anything in there about the online, in person, any of that stuff in there, right? That needs to be cleaned up based on what we just have been doing in the last year.
That's in rule.
Okay, that's a rule. Okay. Just making sure I didn't miss it. I was like, I know it's somewhere. I know it's in there somewhere.
Don't forget it.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, excellent. So what I recall then in the next statute, 2091.08, is there are a couple of instances, again, where language was probably mirrored from the psychologist statute, some exemptions that were listed that as a practical matter really don't need to be. My comment reflected this language can be confusing. It doesn't actually serve a purpose. I think that's the case for both subsections A1 and 2. In other words, these aren't really a thing. So that's what I remember from the discussion. Any recollections that you have, please share.
Nope, you're good.
Okay. Then moving on to this one, the in the context of, I think, several applications and also during that January meeting, there was some discussion around, you know, this exemption is narrowly written to include only the Arizona institutions, the Arizona universities and programs. Perhaps this should be expanded to include salaried faculty employed in all accredited universities. That's hopefully you remember that discussion. That's how I captured it.
This is, Mr. Chair, Ms. Pacnon, I do like that. I, as you guys are aware, I teach full time at Ball State, and their licensure is going to require me to get licensed in that state. Which will be interesting for this reason. Now, they don't have an exemption like this at all, but it would be with the amount of online programs that we have, it would be helpful to see it expanded to more than just the local universities.
Okay. Very good.
Ms. Pacanon, too, salaried could be a part-time instructor too, right? Or no?
I would defer to Ms. Galvin, but I don't see why it wouldn't be.
Yeah, I don't either. I think that could refer to, you know, any status.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then once additional edit, you wanted the this language, such as, to be replaced with including but not limited to, because there are some titles that maybe are, you know, in use that are not represented here for non-credentialed individuals. Does that make sense? Does that ring a bell?
So we wanted it just to be able to be open a little bit more. Right. Yeah, we didn't want it to just be that restricted that somebody came up with some other craziness.
Exactly.
Like MBA tutor. Yeah.
Okay. Right. Exactly. And Kathy, as I'm sort of trying to keep one eye on the instant messages that she's firing at me, she has raised the question of whether we should have a definition of a non-credentialed individual. And I think that's a question that, you know, the professionals in this meeting should weigh in on. Is that a term that is, you know, clear enough to you, or might we need to define it?
What would the definition be?
Yeah, I don't know what it would be. And maybe Ms. Phillips wants to, maybe she has an example. She
wants would that be the RBT? That'd be the RBT.
Okay. And if that's clear and understood to you, then that's the interpretation that staff will apply as well.
Yeah, because it's the extension, right? So it's like if the, you know, the BCBA in a three-tier model has, you know, the supervisor, maybe another BCBA could be a BCABA, could be then the RBTs underneath that. And only the BCABA is certified nationally, but a non-credentialed person would be that RBT.
Okay.
Because right now, Don, an RBT is not a certification status.
Right.
Is it? I'm asking.
What constitutes credentialed? Because an RBT, you could argue, is a credentialed person. They are registered with the BACB.
Or is this? It has the authority directions.
Mr. Chair,
we also want to protect the parents too, right? If a parent is told, "Hey, you know, we want you to differentially reinforce X." We don't want them to be given any grief around their service. I mean, it really gets them to title issues. I'm not going to tell you the delivers. Yeah, I think it's also a protection of a parent or even a teacher, right? Don, if you went in and consulted with a teacher and said, hey, I want you to only call on Billy when he raises his hand, not when he talks out. Well, that teacher is not, you know, a BCBA, not a licensed behavior analyst, but they're acting under you, under your authority, and at your direction as the licensed behavior analyst.
Well, that can get gray really quick.
Because a teacher is credentialed.
Yeah, true that.
Yeah,
but a parent may not be
right. But let's just say you're going in and providing consultation. And you give feedback and you walk out of that consultation, in a school setting, are they providing behavior analytic services?
It's under your direction. So I don't know that
it is, but your direction eventually dies. If you know what I mean, you go in, you do the consult, you walk away a month later, 2 months later, whatever it is that, you know, it becomes a training opportunity versus, you know, and then the other part, the issue is, you know, from a purely science perspective, people are engaging in quote unquote behavior analysis. I know it's not directly, but all the time. So where is that line drawn?
Mr. Chair, committee members.
Yeah.
This question came up recently. And we were directed to substantive policy statement 01-11, where the committee back in 2011, or the board, I guess, defined a supervisee. I'm trying to think how to explain this. To clarify who may practice applied behavior analysis within the state of Arizona under this particular exemption, they determined three different categories: individuals who are licensed under 32-2091, and qualified individuals who are working towards licensure as a behavior analyst and are properly supervised pursuant to 2091.03. And individuals who are exempt from licensure as a behavior analyst pursuant to 2091.08. The board acknowledges the importance of behavior analysis services offered to individuals. So under 32-2091.11, the definition of supervisee, which says a person who acts under the extended authority of a behavior analyst to provide behavioral services, and includes a person who is in training. Through the adoption and promulgation of this substantive policy statement, the board is advising the public that it interprets 2091-11 as allowing unlicensed individuals with bachelor's degrees to provide behavior analysis services as long as they act under the extended authority of a licensed behavior analyst, regardless of whether their supervisee is in training to become a licensed behavior analyst. I don't know if I was hoping that might give a little bit more thought to this. My thought about the non-credentialed definition was that it was an unlicensed individual. What I am hearing from applicants is, and the reason why is because I have applicants who are thinking that that they're credentialed because they have a license in another state, or they're credentialed because they have a different type of license, or and as you guys said, the RBT, the BCABA, and then this substantive policy statement refers to unlicensed individuals who are not seeking to accrue hours for licensure. So as you're saying, it's broad, and that was why I was wanting to ask you about the definition and the interpretation, because I didn't know how to interpret it for people who were asking me.
Ms. Packen, let's see. Would you scroll up just a little bit? I kind of wanted to see the beginning of this section.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, Dr. Davis Wilson, sorry.
If I may, kind of to your point though, I think that the way that I read a non-credentialed individual, so I personally don't refer to as an RBT as a credential, because it is a registration and there's limits to it. That doesn't delineate funding decisions. Mm-hmm. But when we say non-credentialed individual who delivers applied behavior analysis under the extended authority and direction of a LBA, I think that extended authority is very different than the consultative training model. And so when we go in and we're training on behavior analysis, but then we leave. I think that still wouldn't want that parapro to say, hey, I practice behavior analysis. Yes, we want them to understand reinforcement. And yes, we want them to do the same with the parents, right? We want them to do those things, but they wouldn't be under the impression that they're providing behavior analytic services.
Right.
Whereas like a technician is actually delivering services and not like providing education services that can be better suited by incorporating the science and those sorts of things. So for me, I think that this language is pretty clear. If there's hesitation, the only hesitation that I would see is with the RBTs, because I'm a small few that actually is like quick to correct people and say the RBT is not a credential or a certification. Mm-hmm. But because I'm a very small percent few that feel that way. I do think that RBT piece needs fixed, but as far as like the consultative roles and the training and those sorts of things, I think that this statute already speaks to that.
Yeah.
My opinion is we leave it as it is.
Yeah.
Cause I don't know all the history behind it, but I'm fearful of just striking.
Yeah.
And I don't really mess with it. And I get Kathy's point of like what a non-credential is, but the list may be too long to extend it to a point where we're appropriate. And to Heidi's point earlier, you know, we've got a little bit of time to think about this if we're not running legislation this year.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Maybe just flag it as interesting and we'll go from there. See if we can remember why it's interesting in a year.
Very good. Okay, so then moving on to 2091.09, this statute language, again, is going to be very much reflective of 2081, I believe, on the psychologist side. I don't remember any requests, suggestions to tinker with this language at all. Does anyone want to discuss any of the content in the statute? Okay. Very good. Then.
Oh, Heidi, I had myself on mute. I have lots to say about this, actually.
Okay.
Sorry. But again, I think it's for future conversations, so maybe we can note it. But if you go back up, right, essentially it grants, this section grants everything to the board. I think the committee itself, as it moves forward, some of this needs to have some committee action in it, not just board action. And if the committee is going to be the one that sees something, that they should be able to investigate and take a look at it as well in the future. And I know that messes up a whole bunch of sections within this, but I do think as we move forward, and now that the committee's been established for multiple years, the psychology board has overseen us and worked hand in hand, you now have two BCBAs that are in the leadership of the psychology board at its full level, I think that it's probably time for us to be able to talk about expanding some of the things the committee can do, and with the blessing of the full board.
Mr. Chair, to respond to that, Dr. Davey, in what I believe to be the case, and I'm sorry, I don't have the benefit of the history, but I do believe that this statute, once upon a time, did not in any way, shape, or form address the CBA because it didn't exist. Mm-hmm. And so here comes along this recommendation to establish a CBA. And then there was this attempt to chink the CBA into this statute to give that committee, you know, some degree of authority. Now that we've had the benefit of some years of the CBA functioning in the capacity described in subsection D, the committee shall review all complaints and so forth, I wouldn't disagree with you that there's probably an opportunity here to give some thought and some discussion to, you know, is subsection D adequate to protect the public in the larger context?
Yeah, I mean, I just think that a little bit of self-governance there by the committee would be appropriate at this particular stage. So you can note that for later and future discussions, because I think it's going to keep popping up in certain areas where we're in deference to the board where we need to be. But I also think the committee at this point, you know, this is our chance probably in here to propose some statute revisions to give the committee a little bit more oversight of its applicants, not just a pass through for applications and preliminary investigations. Because ultimately, I'm not saying that they should have the full authority of the board, but I do think if they want to investigate something or look into something, they shouldn't have to move that through the full board to be able to do so.
And I think just, you know, in the absence of having concrete examples for you right here, right now, there have been instances where it's not entirely clear to staff how to implement something where, you know, it clearly involves behavior analyst investigation. And so what staff is trying very much to avoid is a yo-yo situation where cases bounce back and forth between the committee and the board. And so, you know, I'm agreeing that, you know, some thought needs to be invested here. I don't have an epiphany right now, but maybe it will come.
I just think, you know, good chance to have some of these conversations as we move forward.
Right. Okay, we'll note that. So then jumping ahead to, we're on 10. This is procedural language, and I would not suggest that this is be appropriate or wise to tinker with any of this language, again, reflective of very much of content that's in the psychologist statutes. It's definitely some important due process information as well. Moving along to injunction, same goes here. And you didn't have any thoughts when you last reviewed that statute. Same with 2091-12, violations and classification. I think you want that language to be retained. Confidential communications at point 13. More of the same. 14, status as a behavioral health professional. I believe you want that language to stay in place. And so that brings us to the last statute, which is 2091.15. And there's been a lot of conversation around this statute, but where the conversations ended, there were no specific recommendations or suggestions for change. I don't know if you want to sort of revisit any of those conversations. I'm sure you remember what they are, you know, around the stakeholder input piece, ability of this very young profession to, you know, continue to be effective in terms of self-regulation, with future terms on the CBA. Those were the kinds of issues that I remember you were discussing. Okay, I'm not.
I like the reimbursement piece because I thought the committee was exempt from reimbursement.
You are exempt from compensation, but if you qualify for reimbursement under the General Accounting Office publishes a very detailed, you know, travel reimbursement manual. So if we send you to an ASPPB meeting, for example, and, you know, you purchase airfare, sure, we can reimburse you. But yeah, you are very much volunteering your time, Dr. Davey.
I love it.
Is there a term limit on the board?
Yeah. Oh, on the whole board?
Yeah.
I think so, but
no, there is not.
Okay. But there's a term limit on the committee.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. And I've gone back and forth for that term limit. One of the concerns that I have with the term limit is that this is an exhausting, like time consuming position. And sometimes we are with vacancies and unable to fill them as is. Mm-hmm. And so it does concern me that we've got kind of a hard stop in the event that we aren't able to fill the vacancies. Now, putting that aside and looking at the other side, I do think that its intent and why it was written like this by the individuals who proposed this language was to ensure that there was movement, especially in a situation in which there was a hypothetical, like what if the person on the board, the association no longer has confidence in or has the best interest of the work they're doing. They wanted to make sure that there was movement, and they wanted to make sure that other individuals had the opportunity to have this experience, which I think they're very valid reasons. I just want to be sure, because for me, what the concern that I had here with the limit is just making sure we're not shooting ourselves in the foot on quorum issues at a later date. But at the same time, I also understand and respect and am comfortable with their recommendation of moving along after, you know, two full cycles. And you can come back. I think it's just the consecutive terms.
So how does that play with B then?
That's a great question, because theoretically yeah. It could be that Dr. Davey has been reappointed on the full board, but that he would lose his spot on the committee, and that would be problematic.
Yeah. So the board, or myself. So it seems maybe it's in there because is the goal for the behavior analyst just to take over the psych board? Because you would have to have that happen for that rotation to be able to occur due to the term limit in A.
Well, and I think we would be in a position, and Ms. Galvin can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the problem we'll run into is there are only two seats on the board. We can't just keep adding those seats out of their statute either.
Right.
And so what we would run into is probably having to make a decision based on a legal reading or legal interpretation, because
we would have, we have a conflicting statute, which, you know, probably means we either need to clear up item number B, and or consider changing A.
The psychology board is, the rules or statutes are already set there. And then to go in and change, it'd have to almost conflict if it just was related to the behavior analysts on the board. It would have to conflict with the psychologists. So it would make sense to omit the consecutive terms, because you or Dr. Davey, if you decide to continue working on the board, would be eliminated from the board simply because of the statute in B, or an A because of this statute. Or is it, yeah.
So do you think
correct.
This, and so this, do you think this is something we can give to kind of Jean and Heidi, like for them to kind of work through the workflow of what this would actually need to look like to be reality? Right now, yeah. I mean, we can sit here and have all this conjecture, but the fact is there's probably some sort of workflow path that they can create to say, this is probably the way to say these things. And so that this, these kinds of things do not happen. We could articulate that. But I think, you know, I think probably giving them the opportunity to kind of dissect it and look at the staggering terms and what this actually means. Again, this is just, this was just bolted on, right? This committee of behavior analysts. So we can just say we've learned from where we're at and that we know we need to make some of these adjustments.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I echo what Dr. Davey's saying. I think we need to look at it. A couple of notes that I would like to make, though, is that the more specific board seats, so like the academic representation, those are very difficult historically to get filled. And so it wouldn't just be a matter of some, like, this sounds fresh meat coming onto the committee, that we would have to, after this next term, we would have to find two people who are willing to do committee and board. And I just am struggling with the time commitment and knowing where we are as a field. I'm struggling with what may happen if we end up in quorum issues because we can't fill the positions because of the time commitment. I think that the committee piece, like committee only members, that's a little bit different because I think people are more comfortable and confident to try out the committee. Yeah. But to take the full step to the full board is one, a very large time commitment that many behavior analysts may not be able to make. And I don't want to speak on their behalf, but I also want to be cognizant of also not shooting ourselves in the foot too. And yeah. So I think if someone came to me and said, hey, I'm really interested in this, and I put in my application, and Ms. Packanon has confirmation that they have applicants ready to go. Mm-hmm. I mean, and it was a matter of just asking me if I would be willing not to renew my term or consider not renewing my term. I'd rather that conversation than be in a position where Dr. Davey and myself are statutorily moved off without the potential of a replacement, keeping in mind that this is still very much the government. And in the next 2 years, we'll have a new governor making decisions anyway. And any of us could be removed at any time anyway. So just keep that in mind as well. But the quorum issues, I've watched the board staff over the last 7 months have to address quorum issues, and it's not fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay. So given that, I mean, I don't know. Well, we can talk about it later, I guess, but I would almost say strike the last sentence in A. I mean, I understand the rationale behind it, but it still seems to me that because of as you're saying, the quorum issues, and I know the latency between one member leaving and then bringing on the new member, that was some time, and we ran into quorum issues for quite some time. So it seems like, you know, it could be, it seems like it's not it may not serve us well to have that on there. And sorry about the dog, but so anyway, but that I would say that striking that might benefit us in the future and cause less issues.
Mr. Chair, I would agree, and I would add that if we look at the stakeholders' intent of that line, mm-hmm. Again, I remember it was Dave Giles, and I remember it clearly. The concern really was what happens if all the people appointed go rogue or become so difficult for licensees to work with that now the committee is causing more harm to the profession, which isn't our job to regulate, right? But them as a professional association, it is their job to ask that question. Yeah. And so I think that the intent of that was this. I would be curious if we went back to that same group of individuals, which I think included me, Dr. Davey, Dr. Giles, Kyle, you know, if we went back to that same group and said, hey, what are your thoughts on this? Which I've brought this up in multiple meetings with some of those individuals on these calls, and they have not argued my thoughts here. I think if we were to ask them now, I think we've mitigated their concerns of that unknown and what if, because we're operating in a way that is favorable to obviously protecting the public, but also not harming the profession either.
Yeah. And a good question might be to come back and say, well, when can we sign you up, or can we go ahead and sign you up for the next term?
Yeah. Yeah. If you've got those concerns, go ahead and volunteer.
Yeah, exactly. And Well, and the other aspect of this is we do have a system of checks and balances. The role of the committee is to make a recommendation. So even if you go quote unquote rogue, I know there can be some holdups, but it's eventually going to go to the board anyway. So.
I will just add that I think that was the second half of their larger concern. Keeping in mind that these are the same individuals who were a part of the original licensure, and they were very scared of the board. And a national level,
I remember that.
And so I think it going to the board is part of their problem. Is that they want to make sure that things are you know, vetted appropriately, because they were concerned about the board. Right. I think we've demonstrated, and the board's done a wonderful job demonstrating the value of this committee, and then standing by the committee and partnering with the committee. Yeah. And so I think it's very different. That even goes for E. If you read section E, where it talks about all, you know, matters such as these, we will communicate to stakeholders before going to the board. We have been able to do that to the best of our ability.
Right.
And again, I think the reason why they had this in there is that fear that the board or board representatives were going to come in and we would be left without representation as a field, regulation without representation. And so I think the intent of all of this has been great, but I think that it has panned out and worked out much better than what they had as their worst case scenarios.
Right.
Let's be clear, it was Gene they were all fearful of.
You can't see me, but I am here.
I know. I see you. I see your name. I just wanted it for the record.
Yes.
I still feel your fear.
Internet is terrible at the moment.
I just one quick comment. I do remember it. I'm sure it was one of the outcomes or assignments of the January meeting that I was to look at the other health profession boards to see if this model that we operate under with respect to board, this advisory committee, whether that was replicated elsewhere. It is not. So this arrangement is quite unique. And I think we all understand, you know, how it happened, why it happened. But I just offer that to you that there's no other, you know, similar identical construct as this one for what that is. Okay. So I guess my final question then is, do you see anything in your statutes that you feel it's imperative that we move forward in 2022 with proposed legislation? I didn't hear it, but I want to make sure that I'm clear.
I mean, I think to be clear, I'd like it all to go forward, but I also understand the politics of it. So I think timing is important. I may also think that there's some bigger issues here that we probably want to take some time and create some stakeholder input around. And that is probably around that committee, you know, the extension of their powers and the issues around, you know, board responsibilities and tenure. So I think the time we should, you know, while we may sit and say, look, we're not going to run legislation this year, I still think we should probably have a couple meetings with stakeholders to flesh out our thoughts for 2022, you know, beyond 2022.
Okay. Dr. Davey, Corbin would like to weigh in on this one. Ms. Hacknon, I would, you know, suggest that perhaps we do it similar to how we have the other years, and because there's also costs associated with costs and manpower associated with running legislation. I don't think there's anything that says we need to run legislation. The BACB standards have changed to address the legislation that was pertinent, like the 1500 hours, because that was all, you know, a part of the sunset and stuff. But at that same time, if the psychology board, if psychologist rules are going to be pushed forward, or psychologist statutes are going to be pushed forward for 2022, then I'd like to piggyback on to conserve some of the costs.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, Dr. Davis-Wilson, absolutely. That makes all the sense in the world to you know, make that process pretty efficient. I'd much rather represent, you know, one bill and all of its elements than multiple bills, because in doing so, they could end up on different agendas. They move forward at a different pace, and it's just, you know, more balls in the air than I think
and anybody wants to handle.
Very good. Well, if we're ready then to move on to the other discussion or the other agenda item, I'm happy to.
While we're doing this, maybe one of the other board staff that's on, can you give us the numbers of how many psychologists are currently licensed in the state compared to BCBAs? If somebody can pull that.
Yeah, maybe I'll ask Kathy to pull that data while we move on to the other agenda item, just so we're not waiting on that.
This is just for my own information.
Yeah, so we can get the raw numbers, but I will tell you that, and it's probably no surprise to you, that the behavior analyst applications and licensee growth is outpacing psychologists.
I would think so. I would definitely think so.
Okay, well, thank you for your thoughtful input and all the discussion on the statute. So, at this time, it sounds like we're holding these unless and until the board decides to move forward with possible statute revisions to that title. Okay. Thank you.
Hey, thanks, Ms. Packman. So I guess we're on to agenda item number 11.
I am ready to queue that up as well. I can go through this in very similar fashion if you'd like. Again, you know, some of these conversations have happened over multiple meetings, most notably the stakeholder discussions that you held earlier this year. I do want to make sure that we go through these rules very thoughtfully, because I do believe that the board is going to want to move forward with some rule revisions in the very near future. And so, you know, again, we would, it makes sense to piggyback and move those two packages forward concurrently. So I do think that rule changes are in our near future. And so starting with, I wasn't really sure how to represent this, and unfortunately my comment was kind of truncated here, but as you recall, we just a few moments ago discussed the reciprocity statute. and you have that authority, but you haven't outlined a true reciprocity or endorsement pathway for behavior analysts. We do have universal recognition, but it, as we just talked about, it isn't quite the same as endorsement or reciprocity. And Dr. Davis-Wilson, I know has, we've had lots of conversations about, you know, what the implications are for the lack of this kind of pathway. It means that that seasoned veteran BCBAs may be precluded from coming to the state and qualifying for licensure. So I'll stop there to let the rest of you have that discussion and decide what if anything, you may want to propose.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, if I may, I mean, I think we need to define reciprocity. And I think back to one specific applicant, there's multiple that have come forward and either didn't have the 270 hours or equivalent, or didn't have the 1500 hours. They had the 750 or what have you. Well, I guess that some of that's in statute. We won't have a say in all of that. Anyway, I think my concern is that we have two people, and two types of people. We really incentivize the newly certified, but if you're not one of the others, coming over here can be challenging. Universal recognition helps with that a little bit, but it also has its, you know, it also hinders it a little bit. So I think it'd be nice to see, you know, an opportunity for people to come over, outside of just the universal recognition. And I'm still interested to see how long the universal recognition issue continues, or topic, I should say, continues.
And if the committee, Mr. Chair, if the committee is interested in enacting, or sorry, my verb choice is poor, but leveraging, if you will, the authority that you have in statute, I can take a stab at drafting possible language. I may be, in doing so, I may be entirely off point, but at least it's a starting place. So there are some pretty good endorsement statutory language with other professions that I would borrow from if that is something that the committee trusts me to do.
So I think that'd be helpful. Dr. Davey, go ahead.
I was just going to say a hell yes, but I just want to point out that the language is there now, is it says the board can do this. So again, the committee only has the ability to make a recommendation for reciprocity to be granted. So these are some of the cleanup in there that we want the process. I think we need the process, and that maybe also as we look through this, that we have the ability to actually engage in that process, either as part of the recommendation or as part of the ability. I mean, right now it can only be a recommendation, I guess, but what is that?
Mr. Chair, Dr. Davey, to that point, I do think we need to look at the rules with two potential pathways. One is, should the psychologist's statutes need changed, then yes, this is a really good reason as to why changing our statutes are going to be really important, because those sections of the rules we can't change until after the statute changes. And so I think that'll be important.
I agree with you, Dr. Davis-Wilson. It's just, this is one of those things, like it's going to keep coming up, that we want to be able to kind of expand our scope of support to the full board. But in many ways, much of this says that we are just providing recommendations. So as you craft it, Heidi, you probably have to say that we're going to go through this process to create a recommendation over. Hopefully we can strike that at some point. But it's just, these things are going to keep kind of bubbling up, I think. And it's part of having a new, I mean, again, we just got that bill. We just got this committee. And so we didn't know what we didn't know.
Mm-hmm. So just to take a pause, Kathy generated the raw numbers that you had requested, Dr. Davey. So currently we have 655 active behavior analysts and 2,034 active psychologists. And if you'd like, maybe if you still have energy and time, when we go through these, finish going through these rules, I remembered I can probably pretty quickly pull up a visual. You can look at some bar graphs that I have made that kind of shows some of the trends, which is personally how I prefer to see this information, but I can show that to you if you'd like at the end.
Yeah, we don't have to do that. Maybe we can put it as an item for next time. You could show it to us on for the full meeting. I think it's just helpful when we think about the growth, and maybe just as even a talking point as we ask about kind of the committee's growth under the board.
Okay, very good. I did want you to admire my work, but I can wait. So.
Oh, I will admire any graph, good or bad.
I know you data people like to see it, so. So that is, I'll tackle some language and present it to you, hopefully at the next meeting. So the first rule, of course, is definitions. And I am looking to see if we had anything here. I recall there's lots of discussion, but I don't see that we proposed any edits here.
Ms. Pacadon, if I may, the definition of client is one of the areas that we don't have a solution for, but we are wanting to craft something to support differentiating between like our OBM, the work that is being done at an OBM level versus the work that's being done at a health and human service level.
So something that we're still, we haven't landed on any language yet that we feel confident propagating. Is that what I'm hearing you say, Dr. Davis-Wilson? Nope. Okay. So then moving past the definitions, 401, 402, to tie back to the conversation that we had earlier that Kathy raised, thank you, is the issuance of the initial license fee, which is the $500 prorated. So we would potentially be striking that language. And I'll add that note to this working draft. Application for initial license. Oh, I'm sorry. Did anyone have any comments about fees? The board is going to have a larger discussion too about some of these public records fees potentially being eliminated, especially as we go, as we're transitioning to this new platform. There's a lot of information that is self-service in nature where, you know, we don't have to, just this process of, you know, collecting a form with a check, depositing the check, which is a multi-step process and, you know, requires two staff to be present. I mean, it's just, it's such a resource drainer. There's so much information that the public can be able to access themselves. And so it doesn't make a sense at all to be charging some of these fees. So moving on to application for initial license. I flagged a note that we will need to add the fingerprint clearance card requirement. So that is pretty clear, I think. Anything else under application requirements? I've not heard any other conversation around revisions. Very good. Examination requirement. That's entirely straightforward. I'm sure no changes there. 404.1, the education requirement. I haven't captured any notes to propose changes here. Okay, 404.2. Supervised experience requirement. And I really would love, in particular, Dr. Davis-Wilson, but really, I think anyone can speak to this. So this section may be an opportunity to strike a lot of language that starting January 1, 2022, we, because of the BACB's changes, and certification requirements, is it truly necessary to retain this language in our rule?
The only, I guess not with supervision per se, as I say, with education, mm-hmm. though that date is extremely important. But with supervision, no, you know what it is. And here's why. Because contracts were not required prior to that date. And there was a couple of other, the session notes had different prescribed requirements. And so my concern by removing that date would be that, like, an individual who was maybe certified, you know, in 2008, may not meet the new supervision requirements. But the changes between, like, 2021 and 2022 are not the same types of changes. So that's why I think that date is really important. You can either keep it or modify it to say to be before January 1st, 2022, and then it would capture everybody.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
But that date is very important for, like, someone like, well, for any of us here on the committee, pretty much, because all of us were certified before that date.
Mm-hmm.
Just to give an example, all of us would not meet the new supervision requirements.
Okay. And I think this note might be actually misplaced. I'm wondering if that note was actually supposed to be attached to subsection B. Does this sound like a conversation that we had recently, Dr. Davis Wilson, or am I dreaming that we had this?
So,
yeah, I think this note was really to be targeted for B, but correct me if I'm wrong. I think I just put it in the wrong place.
Yeah, and I think that it would still apply of we either need to keep that date or move it to January 1st, 2022 for that reason. Mm-hmm. Because like I said, those definitions or some components of supervision would have to look like that. Now, practicum, intensive practicum, combination of experience, that all needs to be revised to mm-hmm. meet the new standards.
Right.
But let's say that so then, yeah, the date needs to be January 1st, 2022, because let's say that someone became certified this year, they under an intensive practicum and they're in California and they're wanting to relocate here, we wouldn't have an intensive practicum. The challenge with this particular section, though, in changing those is these are actually defined in statute. And so I don't think that we can actually, like, revise all of that. I think that we would just have to say on or after January 1st, 2022, that they did those things, that they met those requirements, but it's going to be a linguistics kind of funkiness until that statute changes. Because the statute is the one that refers to the practicum and intensive practicum and supervised independent field work.
Okay.
And that's what has changed in 2022 mm-hmm. is that they're no longer titled that way.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that we wanted to scratch it from the statute entirely and just have it generic instead of titling the programs and then define it in rule.
Right. So in the meantime, the statute and rule language, though, does not establish any preclusions to licensure in Arizona with the BACD changes, though. I think we have done that evaluation and are confident. So we may just have to live with this rule language until the statute changes.
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't remember, didn't capture anything else in this very lengthy rule. Okay.
So on the coursework requirements, that is the one that also we would want it to say before. well, it's a minimum, I guess it doesn't matter, but just to note that the coursework requirements have changed again, that so B1 through 4 is a change from 2022. The BACB has, not the BACB, the verified course sequence from ABAI has it's still the BACB, I guess, that's dictating it, has reallocated those hours. Mm-hmm. So it's now, and Dr. Stenhoff can correct me if I'm wrong, but it's now more than 270, which is fine because we've got a minimum there. But the problem is that they've changed numbers 1 through 4. They've changed that information. So someone could theoretically take a class, start their classes in spring and not meet these requirements simply because as universities, we've had to change how we classify these hours.
Does that mean that we would have applicants who can't meet these minimums?
Correct. Potentially. I don't know, Dr. Senhoff, if you have, I haven't looked at it closely to compare the two.
Yeah, I haven't looked real close. I've got the handbook up right now just to double check. Let's see here. I'm looking at the wrong thing, but I've got. Oh, okay. Yeah, the instead of concepts and principles, so yeah, it's changed. So you've got 45 hours still with compliance code, but then you've got philosophical underpinnings, concepts and principles, which is 90 hours, measurement is 45, assessment is 45. So it's changed, but a lot of that has consolidated into an area. So like behavioral assessment, 45 hours is under the fifth edition where it was 30 hours before. I can't scroll, but that's right, because you have control of that. It's sort of those, the universities that are under the fifth edition task list will meet, I think will exceed these requirements. But it's looked at.
I know that
the
hours will exceed as far as, because the new requirement's 315 hours.
But like ethics, for example, ethics remain the same. Concepts and principles is now at 90 hours. So that's going to be, that's a direct across. Where's experimental design? So the measurement and experimental design combined is now under just measurement as one category, et cetera. Is 45 hours. So, I mean, there's a way to crosswalk it to do that.
Mr. Chair, I was just going to suggest that very thing, that we do a crosswalk just for purposes of reassurance. And maybe that's something that, well, it would probably be a public document no matter what. So that's a resource that we could make available until this language is revised.
And then I think that Ms. Peckman, if I may, I think that what we could potentially do is flag this as something that we will want to change if we're already going through the rule writing, because I would like to see, and we've done this in other sections, I would like to see how we've prescribed this out, that scratched off, and just reference the standards. So we can still have the minimum of 270 hours of instruction, but then instead of saying, and here's what the content areas are, have that statement of as defined by the verified course sequence. That way we're not in this position every you know, time they edit, of having to say like, oh, well, you're short, you know, 3 ethics hours because they moved 3 ethics to 3 supervision. And then have them come back to us and be like, yeah, but my supervision was ethics. You know what I mean? So I think the way that that's prescribed is a little bit problematic. I think it's fine to keep in there. Like, let's say we're going to postpone rule writing until we do statutory stuff. Like, it, I agree. There's the crosswalk, and that's fine. But if we're going to edit it in any way, or we're already changing the rules, I would like it to be similar to the other sections of the rules where we say as designated by the verified course sequence.
Yeah. Yep.
Mr. Chair, Dr. Davis-Wilson, can I ask you just to elaborate a little bit on that? So would the rule language ostensibly say the current version of the verified course sequence, and that way we weren't having to change it with every version as well?
Correct.
Yep. Okay. Okay.
And then, like I said, we can still keep the minimum hours in there. So if, you know, because I know the board has brought it up before, if they come back and say, well, what happens if all of a sudden the BACB says you only need 100 hours,
right,
we could still keep the minimum hours. Mm-hmm. If we're going to change the 270 to 315, that's when we've got to have those dates to accommodate the date changes too, to accommodate those that didn't have, you know, that as an option. Right. But 270, I think, is sufficient. And then, and if they continue to add hours, cool, I don't think we need to change it. But I just don't like how it's prescribed, because it makes it a little bit difficult.
And if you tie it to the graduation date, then we're kind of creating an endorsement reciprocity pathway in the process. So
what happens if the BACB, they're not going to, but let's say they decide to go 250 or 220 after, so the, let's just say the sixth edition task list is only, you know, 200 hours. If it's prescribed in ours, let's just keep it at 270, what is the ramifications of that with future applicants? Because does that mean they have to go and get additional coursework? Is that what the requirement would look like in the state of Arizona?
Yes.
Where it doesn't parallel. And okay.
It does not parallel, and I don't know that, I mean, we could try to propose rule language that would allow for us to take that 270 hours minimum and make it, again, congruent with the verified course sequence, but historically the board has been hesitant in that because of fear of the requirements dropping less than what's safe for practice.
Okay.
To that extent though, could we say not, you know, couldn't, you know, we would accept no less than 270? I mean, that gives us when it
correct. Jumps,
like that kind of language would protect us. I mean, we have kind of the minimal threshold, and it also gives us a placeholder if it jumps for 270, you know, that gives us a time frame to maybe not touch it while we're getting those applicants through.
Correct.
Applying. I mean, we're seeing at the full board level the implications of kind of messing around with how tests are accepted, not accepted in terms of, you know, what the expectations are going to be. So by maybe using some of that, you know, no less than language, we can get the rule writers to agree that that would be acceptable.
Right.
And I guess the other question is the content hours, right? I mean, we're essentially saying, you know, having to do that every single round, the BACB is only going to get tougher and tougher. I mean, the path they're on is that of psychologists. Like, you're going to end up at some point having to have three, you know, about over 1500 hours of supervision. You're going to have a certain amount of coursework that is commensurate with other professions that we want to be equated to. So do we also look at, instead of breaking down this into ethics and concepts, like, why do we not just say, you know, as, you know, as dictated by a nationally certified body, and then put our reserve question, we reserve the right to do X, Y, and Z. Should we not be happy with that? It seems like we're kind of chasing our tail.
Correct. No, that was my recommendation as well, Dr. Davey.
Okay. Maybe I just missed that. I'm sorry. I've been blacking out on and off.
And Mr. Chair, I've been notified by Ms. Denton that she does need to sign off at 1:30. However, we will still have a quorum if the rest of you are able to hang on a little while longer. I don't think there's a whole lot more to review.
Okay. I have a,
I refuse to go.
I have on. A hard end at 2 PM. So.
Okay.
Ms. Pacnon, Mr. Chair, I apologize. I also have a hard stop at 1:30. Heidi, I sent a message as well.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
That is okay. So that what I see happening, obviously, is that this will continue on the next CBA meeting agenda. And so we won't have a recommendation for the board on the 5th. That's fine. We can mention to the board we're working in earnest on some revisions, and we'll bring them forward when they're ready.
Oh, you guys are awesome. Okay, that sounds great. All right.
So I guess since we've got a 1:30.
Move to adjourn.
Okay, quick question. Do we need to talk about new agenda items really quick?
Well, this has to stay on there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Do we want to put a placeholder there for what, for a potential follow-up on the special meeting that's going to be happening this week at the full board level to update the other behavior analysts?
Yes, Dr. Davis, you can.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Okay, do we have a motion? Is that it?
Ms. Denton, I think, offered a motion to...
Do you have a motion to adjourn?
I'll second.
Okay, you have a second? Okay. Okay. Bye, Ms. Denton. So can we add anything to the possible agenda items for the future?
No, your meeting has been adjourned.
Okay. Thanks, Ms. Cohn.
Thank you, everyone.
All right, thanks.